Hey, you. Subscribe. You're watching Radio Free Cybertron. Hosted by Brian Kilby, with J.D. Church, John DeLuna, XV, Amy Morgan, and Rob Clay. For the latest Transformer news, reviews, and more, visit TFormers.com.
This is Radio Free Cybertron, episode 333. It's our 14th anniversary show. What does that mean? Not much, but it's awesome because we've been this 14 years ago is when we released the first episode that nobody at all listened to.
Woohoo!
But it was, you know, it was important. With me this week we have Don, Rob, Diecast, JD.
Hi.
Hello there, JD. So on the show this week, we have an interview with Jim Sorensen. It's part one of two. In this part, he talks about the 30th anniversary collection, the book that came out a couple of months ago, based on basically history of the Transformers comic. And one interesting note, we didn't get this on film, but Jim stated that he did not do the bio for the Transformers Collectors Club subscription service breakdown. Everybody said that Jim did the bio, but he didn't, so.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. Mystery. It's a mystery. We also have a review of More Than Meets the Eye, number 22. We have Q&A with Rob Springer. John DeLuna couldn't be with us for our 14th anniversary, but he was good enough to send us a 14th anniversary edition of the ATT Buzz. Pretty excited about that. We also have an interview with Ronnie, Chris, and Dave, assuming Dave will be there, of Nebulon Pirate Radio, which we are partnering with. We'll start bringing that show to you probably this weekend. If you don't know, that's another Transformers podcast. I really like it. I really like the guys. And we talked about it. I'm like, yeah, why not? Let's do it. So sort of a different take on Transformers podcasting, but I really do like it. Also, this week, we have, we have a retrospective from our friend the computer.
Oh, God.
Pretty much just say that.
Oh, man.
But let's start things off with the return of, this isn't you, JD, don't worry, This Week in History.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so this was a segment that we used to do, and we just sort of dropped it for various reasons, but it occurred to me this week that starting 10 years ago, stuff was happening. So we can always look back on what was going on 10 years ago this week. 10 years ago this week, Transformers G.I. Joe issue 2 was released by Dreamwave. And Jay Lee did the art for that series. I never expected Jay Lee to ever do anything Transformers related. And I know some people like that stuff, but it just does not work for me. It never has. It probably never will. What do you guys think of Jay Lee or that series in general? Did anyone actually read that?
I'm sorry, it was G.I. Joe.
I didn't. It was G.I. Joe.
I'm sorry. I love that Don and I give the same answer.
Hey, that's fair.
What?
This is a great topic to bring up because is it just a coincidence that the G.I. Joe crossover set went on sale at Hasbro Toy Shop
entirely.
Today.
We can talk about that in a minute. So, yeah, it's entirely coincidental. So, because, you know, of course, that nobody really... Harmony Gold, this lawsuit was dropped. Also, 10 years ago this week, Transformers Season 3, Part 1 from Rhino Home Video was released.
Oh, wow.
God, I'm so old.
Yeah, I remember when those came out, we were all just like, finally, we're getting real episodes on DVD.
Yeah, I have all those original box sets, too.
I sold those for lots of money. And then the new edition came out, like, for $50, and all is well with the world.
Yeah. I was going to, but I have seen them so many times, I really just didn't want the new edition because I've seen them so many times.
Yeah, and the Rhino set, they added things like sound effects and stuff, and it was just weird. But most of that only happened if you're listening on the 5.1 sound track, if I remember correctly. It was still weird. But if I remember correctly, our friend Zobivore He helped out with making a lot of that happen, at least filling in some of the gaps they were missing with, text on the screen and things. So that was pretty cool. So, yeah, that's what was going on 10 years ago this week. This Week in History. So as Diecast said, apparently the lawsuit, I didn't know the lawsuit was dropped with Harmony Gold. So the Transformers G.I. Joe SDCC set was released on Hasbro Toy Shop today. $100. That's a lot. That's a lot cheaper than it goes for in parts on eBay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a heck of a lot cheaper. You know, looking at this, I mean, I've got the first 2 years, and I really wanted this set. But I look at the pieces, I'm like, I don't really need it that bad. Because I really want Bludgeon, and I'd like to have Skyfire. But I've already got a couple versions of that mold. It's not like I need another. Because I look at the Starscream Skystriker, and it is completely... it's completely... almost a non-entity because it doesn't transform. Mm-hmm. I look at it and I want it to transform, but of course it's not going to because it's G.I. Joe. Thanks much, G.I. Joe.
Well, I'm just glad that Joe fans who were wanting it for the longest time finally have a chance to get it without there being them having to jump through secondary market hoops for it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'm glad that the people who really want it can get it, as long as they know about it. So it may be gone by the time the show is over. Maybe not. I don't think there was a lot of demand, as much demand for this as there have been for things like, I don't know, Metroplex. But, yeah, still pretty cool. Hey, Diecast, so you went to New York Comic Con this week. And
yes, I did.
How
all
awesome was that?
Days.
How awesome
was
it?
It was awesome. It was jam-packed. So I recommend if you can go, to go. If you don't like crowds, do not go, because it is the most crowded place. Artist Alley was completely crowded.
Rob,
the
we shouldn't go to this.
The hallways were crowded. And the show floor was completely crowded. The only area that wasn't crowded was the press area. Thank God, because I needed some time to get away from the crowds every once in a while, and plus it was a level above, so I could send tweets from there, and they would actually go through as opposed to being on the floor, and they didn't go through at all. But the show was awesome. One of the panels I did was a Voltron Robotech crossover comic book that they're going to be coming out with, and someone from Harmony Gold was there, and I'm sitting in the panel and I'm thinking, wow, it's nice to see that Harmony Gold's actually going to, you know, do something new as
it's
opposed
like,
to...
It's good to know they consist of people and not lizard robots.
So, and I'm a big Voltron fan and a big Robotech fan, so I really, they're saying it's going to be 6 issues to try it out, so I think the first issue hits, apparently there's a big comic book week right around Christmas time, and that's when this first issue is going to hit, so I'm definitely going to try and pick it up. They did say one of the questions I asked where I won a prize for asking a question was if it was going to be on Comixology, and they said as far as they know, it will be on Comixology. There wasn't much Transformer stuff there. I don't know why Hasbro kind of, you know, didn't appear at this show like they did the last 2 years.
They had
I mean,
pre-event though, right?
That pre-event, but who was invited to that? Who went to that?
Press?
Were
you there?
I didn't even know about it.
Oh.
So,
ooh.
And that was Wednesday night because it was when we were doing the
show. Oh, that's
show.
Right. Yeah. That news broke during, yeah, that's right.
But I mean, they had all that stuff that they displayed at San Diego Comic-Con. They had all the, you know, why not display that stuff in New York? There's nowhere else on the East Coast that you're probably going to do that. So I kind of feel like Hasbro dropped the ball not being there. And I really hope that they are there next year, especially with the new TV series that should be coming out. So overall, the show was really good. Just lots of lines.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Was the press area pretty posh?
It was relaxed. It was not I mean, they had tables set up, and they had like our own snack stand, but it was the same snack stand that was everyone else had access to, just another one in the press area for us. But like I said, it was definitely nice having that nice area. It was right above the show floor, so you could actually look out on both sides and see each side of the show floor and get nice photos. And a lot of people were doing the recordings from there for the live video. For the video, there wasn't a lot of press there, at least not in the room. I think they were on the show floor a lot of the times. A lot of people had certain panels they had to go to. I'm really glad that I didn't have to go to specific panels, because it's really easy to miss a panel there, because you're waiting in line for something, and next thing you know, it's, you know, an hour later and you miss something that you wanted to go to. There were a couple panels I wanted to see that I just totally missed.
I'm certain you can't take it all in. I mean, that you would need a whole crew of people. Maybe next year we'll have one, and that would be really awesome.
Yeah.
Hope to be there. But yeah, so that's great. We'll have an actual podcast covering all of the stuff that you saw. Trying to get Anthony Brucalian on that too. We'll talk through a time, because that's cool. Awesome. So much to talk about.
Yeah.
So first up in the news, besides that, actually I guess technically third up in the news, we are getting a new Transformers G.I. Joe ongoing comic. I know the guys here are like, boo G.I. Joe. But I love G.I. Joe, and this is an ongoing comic, and it's G.I. Joe invading Cybertron. And the cover to the first issue, I'm assuming this is a cover, looks all kinds of awesome. It's written and drawn by Tom Scioli. I'm not really familiar with Tom, I'll admit. I guess that makes me a bad person, but...
Well, other things make you a bad person, but...
Yeah, but it looks really great. So, so that's coming. Now, in the press release, IDW is saying that Transformers and G.I. Joe are the two most popular comics franchises of all time.
Really?
Yeah. I'm certain there's probably ways you could grade it to say that.
I guess if you're talking about based on a toy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe most popular comic licenses of all time, but yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
But I'm kind of excited by that. I actually may pick that up. That may be my third Transformers comic, unless I start picking up Regeneration again. Let's see here. But yeah, so that's pretty cool to me.
I'm sure that people will like that.
Yeah, somebody will like that. Not going to pull it up, but we are getting an Asia-exclusive reissue of Masterpiece, Grimlock, if you missed out on that. There you go.
I think that's great. I mean, how long ago did they do Grimlock? It's been at least 6 years, right?
It's been like 3 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, no. I'd say it's more than three
years. Yeah, because Grimlock came out before Rodimus, and Rodimus came out
a year and a half ago.
Yeah, so it'd be 3 years.
And did I hear, I thought I heard that it's going to come with a flame attachment for the sword and a coin that
transforms
the crown?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Wow.
That's pretty
exciting.
Now,
do you think they'll reissue this in the States again, or is this going to be a Japan only?
Let's see here. Which Masterpieces have received reissues in the U.S.? Just the MP1?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
Probably not, then.
So probably not.
Yeah, so, I mean...
Don't hold your breath.
I mean, I'm certain it would sell out if it was released at, if it was released by Hasbro for, Toys R Us, but this is a Takara release, an Asia-exclusive Takara, not an Asia-exclusive Hasbro, so I'd say it's less likely. You know, but I'm certain you can import it now at a lower rate than probably the $300+ it was going before. It's probably my favorite Masterpiece. Probably it's a great representation of the character in both modes. It's pretty flipping huge. It's a really nice toy, and unlike some of the other Masterpiece figures, you can transform it without a lot of thought, but it's not simple.
That's what I was gonna say. It's an easy transform.
Yeah, I really like that. It's just a great toy. And Takara also has an official page now for Blue Streak. And having Prowl, I really want Blue Streak. But I'll probably hold off on that so that I can get G2 Sideswipe. It's the one I'm looking forward to the most. So there was some Transformers news at New York Comic Con. We're getting, I don't even know if I'm going to show this. I guess I better. We're getting a Hallmark keepsake ornament of Optimus Prime. And looking at this photo, it looks more like an air freshener that I would hang in my car.
Yeah. I didn't even see that there. And I was at Hallmark. I got one of their exclusive Wrath of the Rancor figure for Star Wars that I picked up.
I saw the photo for that.
Yeah.
Oh, and if you haven't seen Diecast photos, go to our Facebook fan page. He's posted like 300 photos and they're great. So he did a lot of great work there. A lot of great tweets, and he kept us up to date. I saw a lot of fan sites that had copied some of our photos and put them out there. Uncredited. Thanks, Skillface. I'm picking, mostly. Let's see here. Animated Jackpot came out this week. I got mine. It's,
Yeah, I got mine. It's an animated toy.
Is this one you're keeping?
Probably.
This is the one I would sell if anyone wanted it.
But see, that's the thing, is I don't think anybody wants it. So it's like, why try to sell it when no one's going to buy it?
And of course, this is the one figure that didn't come damaged for me, so...
Yeah.
Just because it has no sort of, protruding marks out of the top of the car. Yeah. So it was actually okay in shipping.
It's okay. It's harmless.
I didn't get to say it, as I've mentioned, but I saw some of the pictures, and I swear it's sort of interesting that jazz mold could be repainted as so many different characters without doing a lot of remolding on the heads and such.
Since it's animated jazz, it's a lot more open to interpretation as to what it actually is.
Right.
Yeah. Because, when we got the Stunicon set, and that was the Dead End figure, all they did was like add goatee. And it was a completely different looking,
I forgot about that. Yeah. It sure is jackpot.
So if anybody wants it, let me know.
Shame they couldn't have added a mini con to that for sites, just sort of with what they're doing in this second subscription service. But I'm sure someone could find something.
Yeah, they probably, hindsight's 2020. So one of the crazier things that I've seen in a while, there is the Japanese Creo comic, and I'm not going to go into this story because I don't know what it is, but it's got I've seen a translated version of this, and I've read it, and I still don't quite know what it is. Basically,
does it involve little girls that like?
No. That's Kiss Players. Kiss Players. So basically, Creo Optimus Prime defeats the Decepticons because he has to go poo, and he's like running to go poo, and he like basically think of Transformers the movie, and when he makes that, he comes to Autobot City and has that attack. Just imagine him trying to go to the bathroom. That's basically what we're talking about. But it's just got the cutest little picture of Optimus taking a dump. And
is he shitting a brick? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, I guess he probably is. But it's just the cutest little thing.
Probably an oil filter.
Yeah, he probably blew a gasket or something.
Takara,
are
you so crazy?
But it's so cute. But yeah, so it's kind of wrong. Really just kind of wrong.
Wow.
Yeah. But, Okay, we're actually sort of reorganizing things a little bit. We are focusing all of our third-party stuff into our weekly third-party roundup. We used to do, for those people who have been listening more than 6 months, we used to do, third-party news once a month, but they're... came so much, we started going and doing it once a week, but just so that we can just sort of run through it all, because frankly, it all doesn't need to be mentioned. You know, when we have 7 or 8 different versions of one character, I really don't care. So, but some of the stuff is awesome. Some of the stuff is awesome. And Diecast actually got to see some of these things. Like, he actually got to see the color version of Not Galvatron, right?
Yeah.
At New York Comic-Con.
The only stand with Transformers figures, well, at least new Transformers figures, he was selling a lot of the masterpieces and stuff. It was called Lunar Toy Store, I think. And he was really cool. He let me leave some RFC cards on his desk.
Awesome.
And, or on his table or whatever. And he had these two figures. And I mean, I was kind of shocked to see them there. I wasn't expecting that.
What do you think of it? I mean, do you think it's going to... I look at it, and it's like, oh, it's Galvatron. But it doesn't necessarily do anything that's, I think, is too very Marvel. I mean, when I say Marvel, I don't mean, you know, like the comic company. I mean, I don't think it does anything that's that novel or that interesting. It kind of looks like your rote attempt at making a new Galvatron. I'm kind
except
of,
with way too much surface detail.
Yeah, I'm left unimpressed.
I mean, do we really have a good Galvatron yet with that turns into a canon like the movie figure? I mean,
no, but that
I
doesn't
can't
mean,
think
no,
of one.
No, but that doesn't mean this is it either, is the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to hold off till I see it in color. I really like the canon on his arm. That's the first time I got to see it with the canon on the arm, and that part of it looks really good. The head looks pretty decent. And the body looked okay, too. I'm really not giving up hope on this figure yet. I really liked it. But I always kind of wait till we get the color images.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, this isn't like... goodness, what am I thinking of? Was it... The Megatron reissue that was just boring. What was it? It was
oh, the one by Toy World.
Yeah, Hegemon. Yeah, because I'm like it's hegemony is the where it's coming. Oh, it's Hegemon. But yeah, so I mean, I really equate that to this, and not because you know it's Galvatron and Megatron, just because I look at it, I'm like that's almost something I would be interested in. It's like the reissued Not Shockwave is good enough to where I look at that. I'm like, that looks pretty nice. But this just goes a little overboard. Just not quite interested. But we actually did see, is it Fans Project that's doing the Gnaw, the Sharktacon, or is it somebody else?
Unique no, toys. That's the same people that were doing the...
Galvatron,
Unique Toys.
Now, I like the look of this. So I think this actually looks pretty good. It's pretty slavish as well, but it just, for me, seems to work better.
This is another one where we already know about the eye gear ones coming out.
Yeah, it's a 3-pack, too.
Yeah. So another one where they're just pushing multiple out at the same time.
So, I mean, I pre-ordered that. I kind of like the look of this. I don't know. I may get something. So, also coming up in the third-party roundup, and this isn't strictly third-party. It's more knockoff, but I just want to point out that we now have knockoff Creos. They're not knockoff in the sense that they are copies of Creos exactly. It's just they are designed to look very much like Creo from the packaging and everything, and I think that's pretty great.
They're like knockoff.
There's a measure
knockoff.
Of success.
Yeah, like they sort of have knockoffish heads. They may have actually used some of the head sculpts, maybe. If not, they are definitely made to look like the Creo figures. But I really like historically what these knockoff companies have done with trying to skirt the edge of, for the companies that do, that try to skirt the edge of likeness. You know, some are just like the CHMS figures, are just complete counterfeits. But, you know, sometimes they'll change the color, change the scale or something where it doesn't look entirely like the other figure. And that's sort of what these do. And they're just kind of crazy and creepy. And their humanoid counterparts look more like Lego minifigs, I think. They are actually, yeah, they're more Lego minifig-y than the Creo figures, because the Creo figures are, they are sort of set apart from minifigs. But these kind of look great. And if I'm not wrong, they are based out of Canada. So we might be able to see these here in Big Lots.
Or possibly one of the other discount chains, because that's what happened with the previously Canada-exclusive Best Lock sets, too.
Oh, yeah. So,
How much cheaper can you get than Creo, though? I mean, what are they going to sell
Best
back
Lock?
Yeah. And the only thing cheaper than that are the building blocks that you can get at Michael's. If you've seen those, those things
I have not seen that.
They are, so Don was complaining about how Prowl, the back of Prowl's legs are hollow.
Mm-hmm.
The back of the minifigs are hollow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Wow.
Cheap. Very cheap.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I can't stand for that,
is it? There's a unique
He's
toy.
He's mad as hell. He's not going to take it anymore.
Unique Toys is also doing not Blaster, but there's not enough of that really to worry about yet. Once we actually have a photo with a head, we'll talk about it. And let's see here. Oh, this kind of interests me somewhat. And again, because it's third-party add-on stuff, but we are getting an upgrade kit from Renderform to turn the new Bumblebee mold into Hubcap.
Unfortunately, it will not turn the new Bumblebee mold into a better grade of yellow plastic.
Yeah.
I think you'd have to have a box of magic to achieve that, Rob.
Yeah. I do want to get the gold fire when it comes out, because I like the basic mold, but I hate that plastic.
I'm not crazy about the mold, and I'm definitely not crazy about the plastic, but the fact that it's, you know, basically gold bug.
Mm-hmm.
Guess I kind of have to buy it.
Yeah, that is on my mind too. But the fact that I think that I would like this toy a lot more in a better color, you know, pretty much seals it. So, it's definitely gonna, if you only want one version of that mold, that'll definitely be the one.
Yeah, and you know, this upgrade kit actually fits in with the toy. It doesn't clash or look stupid like some of the upgrade kit, no offense, but to some of the upgrade kits that we've seen before, it actually looks like it fits the mold. I like it. I think they did a good job with this.
This is one of the first upgrade kits I've seen that actually had light piping, too. I thought that was nice.
Yeah, I'm certain that's probably not the easiest thing to accomplish, because it's not like you can just paint that in.
Yeah.
So that's pretty impressive. And one last thing I want to mention in the third-party roundup. And so BMOG Toys, we are getting a new line of third-party, basically combinable weapons. And full disclosure, a friend of mine is the person who's producing these, so but I don't know anything beyond that. But I actually didn't learn about this until a couple of days ago, and I saw it, and I'm like, holy crap, that looks really awesome. And it was like, oh, Trent's doing these. That's fantastic. Go ahead.
I really like these. Just for whatever reason, it kind of reminds me of Zoid's Blocks, which I really loved and did not last very long here. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing this. If the price is decent, I may have to get that.
Yeah, that's...
Go ahead.
Well, I usually don't buy into a lot of the small little designer lines. Like, a lot of folks I know online are doing the Glios and things like that, which really doesn't interest me. But if this is well built and just done properly, this could be like a small collector line that I will follow. You know, this could be like my Glios, you know, the small little designer lines. And always having extra weapons is nice, but you gotta love the name. I'm sorry. It's just
Yeah, I really, really dig it.
Personal. I mean, it's just
yeah, I think it's a great idea, and like Rob said, it sort of has a Zoids vibe sort of thing going on, and that's just cool. So there you have it. You can follow them on Twitter at why don't I follow them on Twitter? It's at BMOGToys. There, I'm following.
There you go.
But yeah, so at BMOGToys. You should buy that. Trent will thank you. So that pretty much does it for the news this week. Coming up, we have, like I said, the interview with Jim Sorensen, and let's go ahead and jump to that, and we'll be back right after this. With us this week, we have Jim Sorensen. He is the author of many a fine tome. Allspark Almanac, what else? The Ark, Volumes 1 and 2. Allspark Almanac, Volumes 1 and 2. Lots of great stuff. You also, 30th Anniversary Collection, which is an anthology of the comic books that came out recently. I need to pick that one up. I don't have it yet. And you also have, coming up in December, you have The Art of Prime coming out.
I believe it's late November.
Late November?
Might be early December, but I thought it was supposed to be late November.
I think Amazon's at December, so that's when my pre-order is scheduled for, but I'll get it whenever they get it.
It's saying December 10th is what it says right now.
Okay, but that may well be the case.
I mean, what do you know? You're just the author.
They don't tell me. I mean, as far as I know, we haven't actually gotten approval from Hasbro yet, so in theory that could take a little while, but usually with a book like this, it's pretty quick.
So let's go ahead and talk real quick about the 30th Anniversary Collection. That just came out, you said, August, before I started rolling. And that is a collection of the comic series. Is that everything? Marvel, IDW, Blackthorn, Dreamwave, all that?
No Blackthorn, but what we did try to do was have an overall comprehensive view of the history of Transformers comics. Originally we had some thoughts about maybe getting a little bit of the manga in. That wasn't something that we were able to clear. I think that was legal that held that up, because there are, you know, it's more complicated to get those sort of issues into the book. But we did get quite a lot of material from the U.S. and from the U.K., Marvel U.S., Marvel U.K., Dreamwave, IDW. That's what makes up pretty much all of the book.
It would be kind of hard to make heads or tails of some of the manga anyway. Just honestly, some of it's just kind of hard to follow.
The one that I was really pushing for, because, you know, I think the book came in around roughly 300 pages or so, which sounds like a lot, but when you're reprinting comics that are somewhere between usually 11 and 34 or so pages, that gets eaten up pretty quickly, especially if you want to cover not just all the different companies, you know, different publishers out there, but different important creative teams as well. You can very quickly blow through your page count. So what we were looking for, and it's kind of funny to be talking about what's not in the book, but my editors and I were really keen to get linkage, part of linkage, into the book. And that was the Armada manga. It was it came packed with the DVD release and little mini cons that would feature in the manga, kind of similar to how FunPub and TCC do their stuff, where the fiction dovetails with the toys that they have. And that was a really, really excellent manga that came out. And I think we were going to do the 4-page conclusion. So it would have been pretty small, and it would have made a lot of sense. And it was, Doug Dillon has some pretty much official translations out there that we were going to use. So that would have been neat if we could have made it happen. But unfortunately, that wasn't something that we were able to clear through legal.
Yeah. So would there be any competition? Actually, I was going to say, Doug worked for, was it Kitchen Sink?
I believe so, yeah. Or maybe Antarctic?
Antarctic Fresh,
yeah.
Yeah, so are they still around?
As far as I know.
Okay, so I didn't know if there'd be any complications using anything that he might have done. I didn't know if that would have been
I don't think that would have been. If we had to, I could have probably had it retranslated pretty easily. I'm pretty good friends with Andrew Hall, who Hydra.
Yeah.
And he's fluent in English and Japanese. Definitely. So he's really good at that sort of stuff. So if I had to, I would have retranslated it, but I wouldn't have thought there'd be any issue with that.
Probably not. So that you said that is about 300 pages. That's pretty impressive. How many comics? I think the whole comics pretty much are in there. You have something representative from each of the universes or the series, basically.
Yeah, that was the idea. And in the cases where sometimes there were issues that we wanted to get in that we just didn't have room for. So at the back of the book, we talk about some of those, as you know, we sort of called them honorable mentions, as well as what IDW's current lineup was. You know, we thought it even though IDW's current lineup is probably, you know, as strong as Transformers comics have ever been.
Yeah, maybe.
We didn't want to overemphasize those. So we generally, I think we gave RID and Regeneration 1 and Robots in Disguise, I think each of them got a two-page spread where we sort of talked about what was going on in comics now. So they're represented, but we didn't reprint those issues. Also, it's a little harder, you know, because they're so serialized, it would be a little harder to pull out one issue that would represent it. Not impossible, but we could do it. But we, you know, there's quite a lot of IDW in there, as you'd expect. We got one of the issues of Last Stand of the Wreckers in there. We had one of the issues of Mike Costa's run on the book. We had one of the issues of All Hail Megatron in there. We had one of the, you know, the early Simon Furman issues in there, as well as one of the Transformers animated stories. We got one of Chris Mallory's Reign of Starscream issues in. I think that's, you know, I might be forgetting something, but I think that might be it for what we had from IDW. And then from Dreamwave, we had one of the issues of The War Within. And I think we had the very first Dreamwave issue, the preview issue that they had with Lazarus.
Plugging
through the... through the Arctic, and that was kind of fun. I think that was I probably would have done it anyway, but I think John Barber came to me and said, you know, for good or for ill, we have to get some Pat Lee into the book. So we went with that. It's partially because it's a short story, as I was saying, page count's an issue, but partially because it was the first official, you know, mass market Transformers comic
in
over a decade. You know, there's a little bit that was coming out in Japan, and there was a little bit from publications for you know 3H from the BotCon stuff, but that was about it. It wasn't a whole lot, and then quite a lot from Marvel US and UK. I think we got Target 2006, the big Ultra Magnus Galvatron fight in there, and
MicroMaster Wrestling.
No MicroMaster Wrestling. I think for Bob's issues, I actually that was one of those. Disagreements I had with John where I lost. I was really keen on getting issue number 5 of Marvel US in there, which is
All Dead.
Yeah. I did get the cover in because it's just
it's iconic,
brilliant and beautiful cover. And it's also my first issue of Transformers comics that I ever read back when I was a kid. So there's that extra emotional connection. But instead we went with The Smelting Pool, which obviously iconic issue and very representative of Bob's. Yeah, it wasn't a fight I felt too bad about losing, but it was one of those things where we had, you know, we didn't quite see eye to eye on what should be for Bob's issue. And then we had issue 69 from the Marvel US, and I think we had issue 1. And I might be forgetting one or two issues, but that's a good sense of what the content of the book is in terms of the comics. But what I was really proud of with that one was that we were able to interview at least one person, usually, you know, so often two or three, who were involved with each of the issues that we spoke about, not just the issues that we reprinted, but also the issues at the end of the book, the honorable mentions. I thought the Ironhide miniseries was really strong, and it would have been really nice to include one of those issues, but we'd already sort of had Costa's run on the book adequately represented with issue number 4 of the ongoing, which was the Thundercracker sort of spotlight issue that he had done. I shouldn't say spotlight because that has a specific connotation. But you know, the issue that focused on Thundercracker, which was a pretty good one. The other one we were thinking about was maybe 31, you know, the one that ended his reign. We actually thought that might have been a nice way to end the book just because it's so forward looking. You know, it's probably You know, you might be able to find a Transformers fiction that, that takes place after that, you know, further in the future than that, but you'd have to look pretty hard, I think, to do that.
Just out of curiosity, were you able to include any from the Generation 2 comic line?
Yes, thank you. I'd forgotten that. We got a... thanks, Don. You're helping me out here. Yeah, we had two of the issues of Tales of Earth, the Megatron bludgeon fight, you know, the setup for that and the actual fight. And what was nice about that was one of them was the Derek Yaniger artwork, and one of them was Manny Galen.
Oh.
So I know there were a couple other artists that did, you know, a tiny bit on G2, but basically those two guys carried the water for G2. So I really like that I got both of those in there. And yes. Again, small page count and quite an impactful story, I think.
Yeah, I definitely need to pick this up. The bulk of it sounds like it was pretty much contents that was just, you know, that was reprinted, but I'm certain from an editorial or from, how do I want to put it, from a historical perspective, you probably are able to illustrate actually what went into some of this. You said with interviews and things.
Yeah, I think that was the real value that I added, because I don't like to produce a book that I wouldn't buy, and I'm not a guy who's really hugely into anthologies. Generally, my buying habits are, you know, to pick up a digital copy of the book, and then when the first trade comes out, usually not, you know, not usually the one with all the bells and whistles, but sort of the basic trade comes out, pick that up, and then I'm sort of done. So I don't usually pick up all of the, you know, the best of Megatron, the best of Starscream, that sort of thing. You know, but once I have it, you know, in a format where I can put it on my shelf, I don't usually get the next one. So I said, you know, there's a lot of people out there like that, and I'd like to at least maybe try and entice them a little bit to make them think that, yeah, maybe this one's worth buying. So each story I open up with a page or two of interview notes. I think the only issue that I wasn't able to get somebody involved in the original production to talk about was Transformers number 1, the very first Marvel issue. But that one was fine because I had, I think, about 4 pages of artwork that was unused. Artwork,
oh, cool.
Created for that issue, but then they had to change, including the one I really liked was an earlier version of the scene with all the Autobots spread out in the arc where they're doing their roll call. So they had to redo that scene. And you can see where they've kind of you know, traced over some of the images, but some of them are completely different, and the composition is different. And it's you kind of have to, you know, go back and forth between the pages to see the difference. Because when you look at it, your brain says, "Yeah, I've seen this image before." But then if you actually compare it, no, you haven't. It's new. And I think somebody was missing. I wonder if they just forgot somebody and they had to redo it. Though I would think that if that was the case, they probably could have just drawn him in and stuck him in on an added piece.
For the miniseries, Budiansky was the editor for that, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And was it?
And of course, DeFalco? He made most of the bios, a lot of the characters.
Who was it? DeFalco that wrote that? Who was it?
I believe they had several writers. I think Ralph Macchio.
Ralph Macchio. Yeah.
Not you know.
Yeah.
Ralph Macchio, but the comic.
Yeah. Okay,
I like the video. I mean, I can pretty much, you know. I can get physical. That's nice.
That's pretty awesome. So go ahead, Don.
I say one good thing about this book coming out for Christmas is not only would it be a good Christmas gift for a Transformer fan, if you know someone that reads comics but doesn't really deal with the Transformers universe, maybe because there's so much history or backstory, this way they can see all the different incarnations that we've got to enjoy through the years. They can say, hey, I like this artwork, or I like this writer.
This one you could actually get for Halloween because it's already out.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And for Christmas. Yeah. Get it for both.
Yeah, Christmas. But that way...
It's a great Halloween stuffer. You have a $50 book in everybody's bag if you're incredibly wealthy. But that was... but Don, no, that was exactly what the idea was. I mean, I think the idea of the book originated with Hasbro, that they wanted to sort of have this as one of the ways that they could celebrate their 30th anniversary and really have a retrospective where you look through the years. And I touched on this when I was talking about the G2, but I wasn't just looking at the publishers and the eras and the continuities. I was also looking at the creative team. So I was, you know, I tried to get as many different voices in there as possible. In fact, one of the sort of internal debates that I had with issue number 69 was I really liked it. I thought it was a really nice standalone story from the Unicron era. It's one that hasn't been reprinted as much. Issue 75 has been reprinted several times, and it's a bigger, physically bigger story. So if we had that, we might have had to leave something else out. But you know, we already had Jeff Senior in the book from earlier because he had drawn the Target 2006. Oh, I also got Victory, which was an early UK story from the annual with Grimlock in there. So I was looking at the characters. I wanted to get a good variety of the characters in there. So there's, you know, obviously a lot of Optimus and Megatron, but there's also a lot of Starscream and Grimlock and Bumblebee and Shockwave, characters like that. And I wanted to get a good amount of the creative teams. So one of the things that was holding me back a little bit that prevented me from embracing issue 69 quite as enthusiastically as I might have was that you didn't have the Stephen Baskerville inks in there. And I really kind of wanted to get them in there. But there was no really good way to do that because we were trying to avoid characters like Death's Head and Circuit Breaker. Not that it would have been impossible to include them, but it would have added an extra layer of complexity, you know, to include Marvel-owned characters. So, and I think Circuit Breaker shows up around 72 or so, or maybe 73. I think 72. She shows up at the end of that. So we would have been able to include maybe 70 or 71, right, which would have gotten Baskerville in, but then I felt like they weren't as strong stories in terms of the standalone. So that was one where you know, I had to live with not a whole lot of Baskerville. There's a little bit of Baskerville because we talk about Regeneration 1, and there's one with him, which I think is off topic. I think it's really awesome that not only did they get Furman and Wildman back at Wildman for most of the run, but that they also got Baskerville in there.
That's incredible that they were able to do that.
And JP is killing it with the coloring, I have to say.
Yeah, it's when I started picking up Regeneration 1, a friend of mine that runs a comic book shop locally could not get back in. It'd been too long for him to get back into it. And he said, and I said, well, it's for me, it's just like picking up issue 81 20 years ago. It literally felt like I was picking up the very next issue when I was in college at UNC Bloomington, and it was issue 81. And that's just a great feeling.
You know, that wasn't quite my feeling. I'm really enjoying the book, but it to me, I can feel the weight of the intervening years in some ways. I mean, little things, but things like, you know, the issues not having individual titles, you know, having the 5-issue blocks, that feels very much like modern storytelling as opposed to, you know, the way that they were doing things back in the early 90s. You know, that there's a few other things like that. I think what he did with Earth, Wrecking Earth, not that I mind it, I thought it was, you know, the fact that he was able to do that was kind of neat. But to me, that didn't feel like a plot element that would have been something that he would have done 20 years ago. Yeah, for what it's worth.
It's a great, I think it's a great approximation of a continuation synthesized using modern themes and techniques, probably.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I love the coloration. I wouldn't have wanted to go back to the Neil Yamtov style of coloration, although I think it's kind of neat that they did that a bit in issue number 0. I thought that was pretty clever. But I think it's probably good that there's a modern sensibility, but I feel like you can feel the modern sensibility.
Yeah,
it's probably not a bad thing, but you know, it is what it is.
I'm Buster Jones, and this is Radio Free Cybertron.
Some haunted houses tap into your fears, but the haunted theater on Hill Street will sink you into your nightmares. Come see for yourself on October 18th, 19th, 25th, 26th, November 1st, and on Halloween night. Located in downtown Griffin at 111 North Hill Street. For more information, you can visit our website at www.thehauntedtheater.org. For only $7, you can find out if you will be able to awaken from your dreams or remain stuck in your nightmares. All proceeds go to the Griffin Ballet Theater.
You boys a bit bored? Snap me to it! Snap me to a Slim Jim!
Hey guys, it's Rob, and this week's question comes from Jazzmeister. Jazz asks, "Hi, I was wondering how long it would take to get a Games Workshop style tabletop games from the Transformers IDW universe. I mean, there are plenty factions. I think he means factions to choose at the moment in this. The regular Autobots and Decepticons, the Wreckers, the DGD, the Nails, and even if someone take Dark Energon in that Codex 2, there would also be the Undead. It would be great if something like this happened in the next future, because I would buy it for sure." Well, Jazzmeister, thanks for your question. And I have no clue how long it would take. Hasbro already owns Wizards of the Coast, so if there's any internal desire to do something like this, I'm pretty sure they would start work on it, and they would probably just take as much time to produce the materials. And they'd probably just adapt an existing rule set or game system to work with it. They tried that card game a while back, and it didn't take off. Admittedly, those models didn't look the best in the world, but what are you going to do with card models? You know, they're only going to look so good with certain things. I'll be honest with you, I don't even know how the game played. I just bought a couple of packs to fiddle with. Now, if an outside group did it, first they would have to, I guess, kind of develop a working model of the game and then seek license from Hasbro and get it approved. And then it would take basically however long the development process, which would include going through a Hasbro approval processes, would take to get it done. And that's however long it takes. I really couldn't tell you. I'm pretty sure they would also adapt an existing rule set to work with it, because that generally seems to be how these game companies do. They take one set and make it work, you know? Games Workshop probably wouldn't bother, since they seem to like to be, they like to work with their own IP, it seems, and that's perfectly fine. Some of these other companies would probably be all over if given the chance. Now, yeah, I'm sure, even if not the IDW universe, pretty much any setting or just the general multiverse setting would work out just fine for one of these games. I mean, there's plenty of options to choose from. So, but would you rather a tabletop warfare game like Warhammer, or more of a board gamey quest type game like Talisman or something? You know, that's where you'd have to wonder which game would be better for you. Personally, I think I'd like something more like Talisman, because as fun as a World of Warhammer game might be, World of Warhammer. these guys gotta quit picking such similar names. Or these Dungeons and Monsters games. I mean, sure, a tabletop warfare game would be fun, but I'm more of an adventure-y dude. So, but each is their own, really. So yeah, and believe it or not, we've been doing this for 14 years. I just kind of wanted to take a point to talk about this. I first submitted my first thing in like 2002, which is like 11 years ago, yeah. And I was listening for a few years prior, practically asking every day to my pal Brian via email, "Hey, how can I help out?" And then he'd tell me, "Hey, how can I help out?" And then he'd tell me, "Hey, how can I help out?" And then he'd tell me. Actually, I made a few of them that never made on the show. I think I might have FTP'd them to the wrong computer, which is hilarious if you think about some person looking at their computer and be like, "Why is there these random MP3 files in my computer?" I mean, I can just imagine someone opening up their computer and be like, "Who's this guy reviewing G1 Iron? What is a G1? Because I did. Actually, what's funny is when I first started talking to Brian outside of just internet means, like ATT and such, I would email him. And the way I generally talked at the time was generally the way people in my age group talked at the time, which in this area that I live in, which was not the way Brian did. So by me saying, "Yeah, you should come to Georgia and we should hang out sometime," or something, that's just sort of a regular, "Hey, yeah, cool, you're a cool dude" type thing that people said at the time, and Brian thought I was stalking him. He was a little nervous. And in all honesty, I wish I knew that at the time, because I would have exploited that and be like, you don't see a picture of my butt? But it's just kind of weird how these work out. Actually, I can tell you exactly what I was doing. In 1999, I already had interest in internet radio. I had actually did a report. I had to, in a marketing class, I had to do a, like a trade show presentation as a project. And I did one on internet radio. And maybe a year later, you guys remember Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place? I was in my first apartment, bummed out on a couch watching that, and just kind of mentally thinking about running an internet radio station. For some reason, I figured you just have a house full of servers and someone putting CDs in and out of the thing. I had no clue how it would really work. And not that much longer, there was Brian on some of the Usenet groups asking, would anybody be interested in a Transformers radio show? And I was like, yeah, cool, this is neat, I'm going to listen to this. I don't think I thought it was really going to go farther than that. And then slowly, I wet my throat up a little. That sounds gross to say out loud. And eventually, you know, the show starts coming out, and I'm like, whoa, this is the future right here, man. You know, because I was like a 21-year-old college kid, you know. I was like, yeah, internet radio, it's happening. It's happening right now. You're 21, you're kind of a dumbass. And after bothering him for so much time, how can I help? I finally did. And I've been engulfed with it. Engulfed. Yeah, I've been playing with him ever since in the sandbox, and it's been very fun. So it's kind of crazy to think that 14 years ago, I was kind of daydreaming about this on my couch. And then later, I'm actually doing something with it. Talking about my hobby daily or weekly. And that's fun. So, hey, thanks everyone for listening. Be it 14 years or 14 days or 14 minutes. However long you guys have been paying us attention. yeah, it's crazy. I mean, hell, I've made one of my best friends, Brian, through this crazy little daydream. And it's really cool that I've met so many awesome people, made really good friends through this. So, hey. Put your hands on the screen. Kids Club. Alright. Well, hey, if you guys want to send us any questions, please do. You can send it straight to me, rob@tfradio.net. Or go to tfradio.net. There's plenty of ways to contact us there. Or go through our various social networking means. Or hey, check out my blog, roborobspringer.tumblr.com, and there's an Ask Me button there. And I'm actually, I gotta get ready for work. It's like 3:25. So, thanks for watching, guys. Talk to you later. Bye. Where's the stop button?
Radio Free Cybertron has teamed up with Kokomo Toys and Collectibles in Kokomo, Indiana. If you're in the Kokomo area, visit our store for a huge selection of new and classic toys. Visit online at www.kokomotoys.com for our address and store hours. While you're there, check out our listing of pre-order items, as well as visit our eBay store. Visit us at www.kokomotoys.com. That's KOKOMOTOYS.com. We're also on Facebook.
Warning: the following segment may contain spoilers for the most recent Transformers comic books. Alright, so, More Than Meets the Eye 22. I don't think we've been waiting for this quite as much as 21, but...
No.
It had to fall somewhere.
Yeah. And, you know, just on... On the surface of it, on what happens in it, it's a nice little standalone issue. Mm-hmm. It's just looking at it, you know.
It has nice covers, though.
Yes, the covers are really nice. Mm-hmm. And then there's the inside, which is kind of jam.
Or, you know, facepalm.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, you know, the artist, James Rice, did do the first of the Armada pack in comics, and he has certainly gotten better since then. But he is just not suited to this book.
You know, it's no secret that Dreamwave enforced an in-house style on all of its artists. And while, I mean, you know, he worked on the Armada ongoing book also, not just the pack-in comics.
Okay.
So, I mean, you could see in his body of work that, yes, that was being pushed on him too. But I don't think it was entirely being pushed on, because some of the panels in here are just a little bit dream wavy.
Yeah.
It really struck me with Thunderclash's first officer.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's really got that marshmallow thing going on.
Yeah.
And then there's the one panel where Tailgate's reaching toward the camera.
Mm-hmm.
As it's trying to take your purse. Old Dreamwave jokes. Yeah.
And also, like you said in your written review, he managed to make Tailgate look creepy. And, I mean, Tailgate looks like something from Al Giver, and that's not right.
I mean, if you look at all of the character models, it just, I can't even describe exactly what he's done to them. You know, everybody's recognizable as who they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Vaguely.
Yeah.
But there's just this... It's horrible.
It is. You know, one of the things that makes the More Than Meets the Eye designs work is that there is a lot of detail to those designs, but it knows where to put it and it knows when to back off. There are still, you know, we've complained about this on toys too. There are still flat surfaces with just enough detail or no detail where merited, and we sure don't have that here.
The other way I look at it is another thing I wrote in my review of this. You know, take a non-Bruce Timm Batman and put Kevin Conroy's voice on it.
Mm-hmm.
You enjoy hearing Kevin Conroy's voice, but it's never right because that's not the body type that goes with that Batman.
Yeah. That reminds me, Arkham Asylum and Arkham City are on sale on Steam this week.
Focus, Rob, focus. Or else we'll be here all night.
Yes.
You know, I think the story is pretty good. You know, this had to be written, like the spotlights were, months in advance of where it was going to be published, because it had to be ready to go with the Skids toy.
Yeah.
Which is going to be out, you know, maybe as early as next month.
That'd be good.
Which is, well, that's when the pre-orders are for.
Yeah.
But somewhat lost my train of thought. You know, this isn't really connected to anything that's been going on in the last few months strongly. The very end of it basically falls in between scenes of issue 21, but for the most part, this is all disconnected episodes that could have been slotted in anywhere in the course of the story.
Yeah.
And I kind of enjoy that.
I do too. And there goes my train of thought. But yeah, I like standalone issues, and I, you know, like you said, I like that it's not... It also kind of serves as a good old-fashioned recap issue in its way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if that was intentional. I have a feeling it was more of an unintended side benefit. But, you know, this is not, except for the art, this is not an awful book for people to be picking up as their first issue of this. It lets you know what has been going on in the first season. I mean, obviously not all the details, but enough that if you pick this up and then go into Dark Cybertron, which is apparently going to be included with all the toys next year, you know, you're not going to be completely lost.
And it is kind of intentional that this serves as like a primer into this universe. And if you think about it, you know, Skids and Waspinator are shipping in a wave together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Skids has the introduction to More Than Meets the Eye, while Waspinators has basically the setup for leading into Dark Cybertron from the Robots of Disguise side, because, you know, there's G-Axis and his crew getting hold of the Metro Titan, which is obviously going to be a big plot point for that. So, you know, this wave, it's kind of like the settling in for people to prepare them for what Dark Cybertron is going to be through the next several waves of toys.
Yeah.
You know, Dreadwing and Goldfire, Bumblebee don't do that as much, but that's mainly because those are just, like, introducing toys more than they are building onto the story that's going to be presented over the next several months.
Yeah, though, in its way, Goldfire's comic does, you know, sort of bring you up to where things are in Robots in Disguise. You know, it's not exactly a recap issue in the sense that this is, but it, you know, it is more, it is kind of reflective on, you know, the end of the robot politics arc. So, you know, in a sense, that will function pretty well too, I think.
Yeah, but like most things, More Than Meets the Eye kind of does the whole concept of introducing new readers in a little bit more smoothly, and I would say completely.
Yeah.
You know, the art. No, you know, I don't like to just tear apart the work of an artist, because art's really subjective, and there's probably somebody out there that actually enjoyed this art in this book. I haven't run across them yet, but they probably exist.
I'm sure they do, and like I said, it's not bad art, it's just the wrong art for this comic.
I mean, there's some things that are a little incomprehensible.
Yeah.
The scene that I eventually figured out was Ultra Magnus hugging Thunderclash.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if you take that panel completely by itself, much like I'm showing on screen right now, there is no way to tell what is supposed to be happening. If we didn't have Tyrest's dialogue mentioning a hugging incident a few issues back, there would be very little clue what that was even about.
Mm-hmm. Totally went over my head, so...
And, you know, we were talking about making some characters look like they're going to eat you. And, like, First Aid manages to look like an insect.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't know how you make a peg-headed, face-plated robot look like an insect, but it happened.
Well, like I said, Tailgate has a similar problem. He looks like he's out of Guyver, which is, you know, full of horrible insectoid organic monstrosities.
And Rung goes from looking really sad to really angry, which doesn't work for Rung in either case.
No, Rung really needs to be more expressive than that. More correctly expressive is probably the best way to put it.
Rung's very expressive, but it's always very neutral.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how that works, but
and
I think it's eyebrows.
Yeah, but I did like the bit about Rung's transformation, though. Mm. That in the post that where James Roberts on IDW's forums, where James Roberts was talking about how this had to be done so far in advance, because of the toy schedule,
right.
He kind of casually mentions that, you know, small things brought up in this issue will come to be significant later. So I have a feeling we're going to find out that Rung's alternate mode is useful in the main plot for something.
Either that or it's... Okay, there's a cover from one of the solicitations for a couple months from now, showing, I think, Ratchet and someone else on a planet surrounded by small robots.
Okay.
So I think the new mechanoid race that was introduced in this issue is probably going to play a role in Dark Cybertron. And if you think back to the toys again, there's that Minicon 3-pack coming out.
Oh, man, I didn't even think of that. And they were, and just about all of these mechanoids were kind of shades of green in this issue, weren't they?
A little bit on the fluorescent side, but yeah.
Yeah, the toys seem to be a deeper green, but it's still, I think that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes sense now.
But the Rung thing is good anyway, because, of course, Rung, who is basically the anomaly in all of Cybertron's history, is also the one person who completely contradicts the functionist ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Every form has a purpose except yours. No, he's an ornament, and they still spelled his name wrong.
Yes.
Literally, they spelled his name wrong. Yeah, it's not a bad issue. You know, there's, like, the whole problem with this is going to be the art. I mean, everybody's going to look back at this and think that this was a well-written issue that was really hurt by the visual presentation. And it's a shame, because there is things thrown in here that would be cool if done by the normal artist or done by one of the better fill-ins like Guido or Nick Roche.
Yeah.
That group shot at the last page would have been a really nice capper to this issue if it had been drawn correctly.
Yeah.
As it is, like, take Rewind in the middle. Remember the first opening for Alf? At the very end, where the guy in the Alf suit runs up? That's what Rewind looks like here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's terrible, but all through the issue, anytime Rewind was on panel, I thought he looked like Alf.
Yeah. I can kind of see it now that you mention it.
You know, as I was going through the issue, trying to figure out how to write the review without sounding like a horrible monster, the only thing that kept coming to mind was that if IDW ever wanted to do another book set in the movie universes, this is the perfect artist for that.
You know, you're right.
Because he's great at making ordinary Transformers look like utter monsters.
I wonder if somehow he would make the movie Transformers look completely friendly and harmless.
Which would be entertaining in its own way.
Yes, it would.
Hey, you. Subscribe!
Hey everybody, it's your old friend John DeLuna with the ATT Buzz for Radio Free Cybertron and for the week of October 13th, 2013. So much is happening on alt.toys.transformers, so much on the legendary ATT. Let's go. Let's see. First, we've got two legendary reviewers going over thrilling 30 toys and a little toy envy. Let's dive into it. First, Dave Van Domelen, yes, he is still alive and kicking. Oh, is he kicking? On ATT, he reviewed the first wave of Thrilling 30 Deluxe Toys. That's Trail Cutter, Orion Pax, Megatron, and Bumblebee. DVD gave Trail Cutter so-so reviews in both modes. He felt Orion Pax didn't feel like Orion Pax. Felt like that toy was meant to be someone or something else. Megatron, good bomber mode. Okay, robot mode, terrible shoulders. That's an understatement. And speaking of understatements, he said Bumblebee was a decent adaptation with some color mismatching, you think? You can read Dave's full review on ATT. Head there now. And while you're over there, Zobivor. Yes, the Zobivor. He's also alive and kicking. In fact, I gotta tell you something. I haven't been on ATT in probably a decade, no exaggeration. And the first two authors I stumbled across on ATT in over a decade, DVD and Zobivor, holding it down for the G1 originals, the OGs of ATT. Anyway, Zobivor, the man, the myth, the immortal fan, reviewed Generations Metroplex. He called it both amazingly cool and seriously disappointing. Pick a side, Zob. Please, pick a side. He points out that he's only slightly taller than Fort Max. But hey, a win's a win, that's what I say. So, Fort Max is relegated to second place, even if it's by a fraction of an inch. Zob didn't like the fact that you can't store Metroplex in his box, what with the minor assembly required when you open up Metroplex. But this was such a big deal to Zob that he actually disassembled Metroplex to see if he could do it. And he also made a reference to the turtle blimp when describing this, so shout-outs to 20-year-old references. We love you, Zob. Overall, he did like it, and I think Zobivore's review is definitely worth a read. Although you must point out, I must point out, that Zob has already broken his Metroplex. Anyway, for my money, Metro is a must-have. If you enjoyed the original toy, this is a darn near perfect upgrade, so highly recommended. Finally, some things like DVD and Zob never change on AT&T, and one of those is toy wish lists. So guess who started this thread? Zobivore. Talking about toys that he still doesn't have and still pines for, like it was 1998 all over again. Zob wants Masterpiece Rodimus, Bakon Dreadwing, Club Runamout, Runamuck, and Runabout, amongst other things. Other people in that thread still want Action Master Megatron, still want the Omnibots, and people still want the Japanese Metals versions of the Transmetals from Beast Wars, which are overall excellent. And apples to apples, oranges to oranges, they, for the most part, are superior. A little bit prettier than their American counterparts. Anyway, most of what I want these days is third party, which was probably a four-letter word on ATT. And that's the ATT Buzz for the week of October 13th. For the crew, this is John DeLuna. Until next time, peace out.
Hey, this is Brian Kilby. I am sitting here speaking with the guys from Nebulon Pirate Radio, M-Bob, Ninja Dave, and Topher. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
So we've had a few issues here trying to make this work, so hopefully like my system doesn't explode or something, or I'm not attacked by Soviet agents during this. I'm expecting the worst. So hey, so NPR is a Transformers podcast that unlike most podcasts, we do RSC through Skype. You guys pretty much only do this like together. So you're like real life, real world friends.
Correct. Yeah. We
and also enemies. Frenemies, if you will.
Yeah. So do you guys take pride in the fact that you like prove that Transformers fans actually do have real life friends?
Absolute pride in that. Yeah, we're bucking that trend at least. Oh, yeah. You know, we're trying to.
None of you guys like have a girlfriend in Canada or though, right? Like, you know, like XV has.
No, actually, one of our girlfriends actually just appeared on the latest show, so there's voice proof that least one of us have a real life girlfriend.
Not just girlfriend, but fiance, which means she's going to have my last name.
That's awesome. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
The Princess Obscure.
You know, my wife took my last name, and I'm like, why? Why would you want this? But, you know, that's great. Some people want that, some people don't. Hey, so guys, tell me about your podcast. So, what led you to do Nebulon Pirate Radio? And what's your angle? Because there's so many Transformers podcasts out there. What sets you guys apart?
Do you want me to take this?
Go ahead, Captain.
Start off.
That was his baby. That was his baby starting out. So,
well, we all met up through Sharktacon, actually, and Retro Reboot in Shaw, North Carolina, and just me, Topher, and Ninja Dave. We just kind of. We came together and glommed together in this really awesome, just way that we knew we had chemistry together. And one of the fun things is we would sit around and we would just talk Transformers, giving our opinions, all these various other things. And I think I was like, you know what, guys, we need to put a microphone in front of us and do what we do. Mm-hmm. And you know, I listened to RFC, and I was like, okay, this corner of the market has been captured. I listened to a couple of Transformers podcasts, and I went, you know, there's that great vibe that a lot of them have, but one thing I have noticed...
A lot don't, to be honest. Yeah,
some don't, that's true. But really, we just wanted to be irreverent. We wanted to be just some guys hanging around talking about Transformers. And I think what really sets us apart is we have no problem going at each other. One of the best segments we have, I think, is a thing we call the retro bro down, because every podcast has a retro review of old episodes. And I went, you know, let's take it to where one of us likes it, one of us don't, and we just have at each other. And entertainment ensues. It's a beautiful thing, is the retro bro down. But I think what really sets us apart is we come at it, we evolve with it. And we are normally four entertaining guys to listen to.
I think that's a major part that people forget about doing a Transformers podcast or a podcast in general. If nobody wants to listen to it, if the people on don't have great chemistry, there's not really going to be, you know, that many people listening. Yeah. I mean, the potential audience is really damaged if the chemistry isn't there. And that's what I really like about you guys. You guys, like, work together really well.
Well, thank you very much.
Definitely. Thank you.
Yeah, the one thing we don't want to be is, you know, you have those podcasts where they're by the numbers, they're very kind of dry. I'll be nice and say dry. And they're, you know, the ones that are focused solely on the toys, and they deconstruct these things, and that's great. But at the same point in time, I'm like, you know, I would rather just talk about how that made me feel, as opposed to, well, this ball joint here doesn't do this, and I'm like, eh. I'd rather talk about why I love it than why I don't.
It's Transformers meets The View.
No!
Minus the estrogen.
Oh, dear God, no.
Actually, I guess at their age, the estrogen, The View doesn't have really a lot of estrogen either.
Not naturally occurring, no.
No.
But the overall goal is to really speak more so to the common people, those that are the diehard collectors, the diehard TF fans, and those that are completely new and have no idea what this world is. You know, we're that high five for the long timers, and we're the open arms to the newbies.
Well, and we wanted to bring back the round table discussion.
Mm-hmm.
As well, I think a lot of the podcasts out there are kind of missing that for the most part, there's something. The beautiful thing about our podcast is we get starting to talk on a topic, and Lord knows where it goes from there.
Yep. Yeah, RFC is kind of the same way. We've been over the years. We've been several different shows. we've basically done and tried everything, and where you guys are at are kind of where we landed after, you know, a couple hundred attempts. And I think it just really works well with the way the show works. What I like about it is, as you said, it's irreverent. And, you know, that's a hard thing for me to be, is like irreverent. I mean, I'm a total ass, and when I'm not sitting here behind the RFC microphone, I'm completely irreverent. But when I'm doing the show, I'm kind of, you know, I guess my vision for RFC is I want to be the Tonight Show of Transformers podcast. That's where I want us to be. But
I gotta say, you are, actually, in my opinion.
Thank you. Thank Indeed. You. I don't know about that, but that's my vision of where I want us to be. But I can't like be like really irreverent and be the Tonight Show of podcast. And what I like about hearing you guys is the fact that you guys just don't give a shit like that. It's just say what you say, and how you feel it and what it is. It's great.
We want to be the Daily Show of Transformers podcast.
Yes, yes.
There you go.
There we go.
We want to bring the fun back into it, because I mean, it's just dealing with Sharktown. We encountered a lot of fans who they really felt alone in a lot of things, in a lot of their fandom. You know, they're collecting and what have you, and they're just feeling like they're just on an island, just doing their own thing. And we are, I guess, an example of how, hey, you know, you don't have to be the alone, you know, that alone person. There are people out there that are into stuff just like you. So find them and mix it up with them.
Yeah. So you guys, when you were putting Sharktacon together, because of course you were on the team that, you know, did Sharktacon, in putting it together, that's how you guys sort of pretty much came together and came up with this idea. So the experience at Sharktacon and like dealing with all of the fans, how did that really affect the direction that the show has gone since then?
We started recording these a little bit before Sharktacon began. Mm-hmm. And one thing that Sharktacon made me realize is there's a wide audience out there that is a lot more than I thought it was. Mm-hmm. But there was a great little bit of moment during one of the panels where me and Chris had to pretty much entertain the crowd waiting because the voice actors were learning their lines. And the chemistry right there was there. You could feel it in the crowd. And I thought, you know, we have something special. And if we get people to listen, I think we're going to have something that people will appreciate, and I think they'll pick it up across through the speakers.
I like how stuff goes through the speakers.
Yeah,
that's pretty. I mean, that's pretty much how it is. If you don't feel it, I can do a show and I can think that the show is great. So, but everybody can listen to it and think it was crap. Most of the time, when I do a show and I think it was crap, that's when I get the most feedback. It's like, oh, this was great. It's the way that it's. It's how people receive it. It's how people feel it. And it's being able to convey all of this information, just being some, for me, like I said, I sit here and record the show and we do it over Skype. You guys are together. But being able to convey, like, your thoughts and feelings and opinions and all of this and share it with somebody halfway across the world, you know, through their computer, through their iPhone, their Android phone, their iPod, whatever, it's really awesome. It's really powerful. And I think the fact that you guys are, you know, just sort of came together the way you did and you're able to do this, I think it's novel. I just think it's just really cool. So, so starting, let's see here. So we're recording this on October 17th. I think I mentioned during the show that starting this coming weekend, we're actually going to be, we're going to have you on the website. I'm looking to have this up by, oh, it's October 17th, by probably Sunday, October 20th. So when people go there, what do they expect to see? So you have the show, Nebulon Pirate Radio. Do you have anything else, any spinoffs? Is Retro Bro-Down, that's part of the show, right? Or is that separate?
That's a separate spinoff on its own. We decided to let it, we think it can handle itself. Topher Heads Up are really fun toy chest. Topher? And
basically, on that show, what we do is we review figures, any and all. It doesn't matter. The more obscure, the more fun I'm having, because I specialize in the obscure figures. And basically... Yeah,
what's an example? What's an example of a figure?
Of an obscure figure?
Yeah, something obscure.
How about my collector's club that's coming, that the Ninja and M. Bob and I are going threesies on, that Waspinator. Oh, goodness. What is it called now, Roddy? I can't think of it.
Thrustinator?
Thrustinator.
Thrustinator Madness. I don't know. We're going to put that up on eBay or something.
No, we're not putting it up. I'm going to frame it. I'm going to shelf it, and I'm going to love it. No one else would do it.
Will you call it George?
No, I won't call it George.
You'll pet it and you'll love it. Yeah,
I won't call it George, but I will pet it and love it. Mm. Occasionally, it may sleep with me.
Hi-oh. then we also, the other one we have is the bookshelf. And that is pretty much, actually it's the book club, isn't it?
It essentially is.
It's the bookshelf.
The bookshelf's something different. Now, the book club, which is what it got renamed into. We don't review individual issues. What we do is we review storylines, like almost like we treat them like novels, almost like we our first one was the Remain in Light from More Than Meets the Eye.
Yeah, the story arc vignettes.
Yeah, so we kind of treat it sort of like a book club. where we just analyze the crap out of it. What it means, its connotations, what's underneath it. You know, what we liked, what we didn't like. We analyze it within an inch of its life.
Indeed. We have other ideas on the way as well, but yeah, those are the main two that kind of came out of the main podcast. And as we grow, and as we record each episode, we evolve, and that's essentially the hallmark of what Transformers fans are. Evolution.
The main problem we had was we had all these segments, and then we had news, we had comic book reviews, we had the bro down in there, and then we had a main topic, and then we found out we really talk a lot about everything. So
yeah, we had planned it out for like what, maybe an hour, hour and a half, and it was going to almost 3 hours at that time. We had to edit down. We just sat around just talking about it, you know.
It felt like the time was just flying by, because, you know, we sit down and think we're doing an hour, and by the time you look at your watch, it's like, oh man, all this time is passing, and we're still having a good time with the interaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the realization that we were doing too much time was when I had to cut episode 4 into 2 halves.
Yeah.
2 separate 2-hour deals. So that was, I was like, okay, I got to start pruning.
Yeah, I try to time stuff out. Normally I do a pretty good job, but sometimes I'll have the occasional 2.5-hour episode. I mean, not that common. I think this week's episode is going to be about 2.5 hours.
Right on.
2 hours. But yeah, I mean, I personally think, you know, most shows, 2 hours, I don't really want to listen to a 2-hour show, because especially if somebody's just droning on and boring. But when people are enjoying themselves like you guys do and people like each other, you know.
Oh, it does. It flies.
It doesn't get old.
Not at all. And it's and that's what always amazes me. I go in, I'm like, all right, we got bare bones now. We touch some news and we do the main topic, and we still are hugging that 2-hour mark. Because we just get in, we start riffing, and we just start going. And we have the outline, but that does not necessarily mean we adhere to it strictly.
Not at all.
Yeah, I know how that is. We basically had to change the outline of RSC. We would have a topic every week. But as more and more news started coming out and all this third-party stuff, we started focusing more on that. And we enjoy talking about that stuff. And, you know, it's sometimes we can just rib on stuff for, like, 10 minutes, like in his article. And it's fun to listen to. It's fun to listen to, and, you know, we might do a topic that we've done 2 years ago, because there's a finite number of topics, in all honesty, that you can really cover. And it just became easier to just focus on the news. As long as you add value to the news, you're not just reading the news. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the old tformers.com podcast, you know, I really like Anthony, the guy that did that show, but his format was pretty much, they would just pretty much do the news. They would literally read it straight each week, and I think if my podcast is me reading the news each week just straight, I would probably slit my wrist.
Yeah. Only Ted Koppel can read the news and not lose interest.
And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, just straight through. Well, yeah, that's our thing. When we handled the news, I think I cherry pick maybe 5, no more than 5, that actually just pique my interest or pique our interest. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that, because I'm not really that concerned with, you know, because RFC, I think you guys handle the news section beautifully. There's no need for me to cover.
You got listeners that don't listen to RFC. They need the news as well.
They get some news. And they'll get the irreverent point of view of that news, because we were all over that Hasbro Harmony Gold thing. We were hoping for a long haul.
Oh yeah,
we were having so much fun.
We were anticipating government shutdown levels of. I think it's so fandom. I think it speaks to the fandom that there's always some news coming out. I mean, there are times when we have dry spells, but. Because the fandom is so expansive, I mean, we have, you know, if Hasbro's not doing something, then someone over, you know, Takara's doing something, or third party's doing something, or some of the fans are doing something, and there are conventions going on, they're kind of spread out throughout the year, so there's always something to report, and there's always someone willing to listen to, you know, what's going on, and, you know, we love doing that.
Yeah, but there are, I mean, you know, news is cyclical, like, periods between, usually after BotCon, or... after Toy Fair, period between Toy Fair and BotCon, sometimes it can be kind of dry. Sometimes it's a little hard to get news then. But, you know, BotCon's always lots of news. Toy Fair, always lots of news. So there are periods when the cup runneth over, and there are periods when you kind of just have to make do with what you can make do with. So, I mean, that's pretty much the way that we do it, or that we found. Once we actually started moving into more third party news, though, because now there's more third party news than first party news, and it's kind of ridiculous, honestly, because when you have 4 or 5 different versions of the same character coming out from 4 or 5 different companies, I think we're in a bubble right now.
Yeah. Oh, we absolutely are, and I'm
the zenith at that point. Yeah.
You know, I'm waiting. See, that's what we're doing. We're just collectively waiting for that third party bubble to bust, and then we're just going to sweep in and collect all the remnants and make it better.
Yes, that's exactly what I hope. I want to see that happen.
You know, from the ashes of all these multiple Predakings will rise one decent Monstructor.
That would be nice. Get a Monstructor, and then, you know, later on get a Dino King out of it. That would be great.
Yeah. Exactly, you know, and let's finish up that Headmaster stuff.
Oh yeah. I want to get a good brainstorm out of this before it's all said and done.
Mm-hmm.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. If there's anything that I think anyone's going to walk away from Nebulon Pirate Radio, they're going to realize that, you know, we don't care about upsetting Hasbro or Takara because we're not looking for anything from them. Mm. And we're not really big fans of Brian Savage. So we like being the guys that sit in the back and toss spitballs at the stage.
You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
It's another Prime Retro review from your favorite fangirls. I am Amy.
I am Nick. Hello.
Hello. And before we review today, I just wanted to say a happy anniversary to the RSC crew, as this month of October marks the passage of another awesome podcasting year. Woohoo!
Woohoo! I mean, that's crazy.
14 that's years, crazy. Actually. It's 14 years for RFC. It's just crazy.
That's a
crazy
long time.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. I mean, I think they took a couple breaks in between there, but yeah. Yeah.
It's been around for that long, so.
Yeah. And now they have 2 fangirls. Woohoo! They didn't have us starting out,
exactly.
So. All right. So, today for review is episode 13 of season 1 called Metal Attraction, which was written by our friend Nicole Dubach. And it originally aired July 9th of 2011. And just a little heads up, she also goes off after season 1 to write a lot of the Rescue Bots. So, and you can follow her on Twitter.
She's a cool gal. She's fun. So.
I have got a chance to meet her. She bought one of my Wreck and Rule shirts.
There you go. See? Now, how cool is that?
Yeah. That was fantastic. I just, every single time I think about it, do a little squee. Oh, goodness. So, on our last review, June was let in on the secret science fiction club that Jack is a member of. Namely, the Autobots let her in on the secret handshake, because now she shows up regularly at the auto base. And that's how this episode starts. But it's more cramping the style of our hip teenager and making the bots eye roll at her motherly antics and questions about safety.
Especially a certain other bots.
Yes. So, Nicole, bringing June into the club, good idea or bad idea?
Well, I got mixed emotions because whenever this series started, well, any kind of series, you're just like, where are the adult supervision? Now that they have it, here's your question. What would happen if they had adult supervision? You know, and honestly, I don't think June is a horrible helicopter mom, as Miko calls her.
Yes.
I mean, she just, hello. It's cool robots. I would like to get in there too, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Come on. Doesn't she think this is a cool thing? I yeah, you know, she's going to worry about Jack more because she very knows true. That he's into some big stuff now. But yeah, I don't think it's always a bad thing, but
there's definitely those uncomfortable moments where, like, yeah. you know, she gets out of the car and says, "Oh, and I wore heels and everything."
That's
like, what was she meaning by that? Are you saying that you're like coming on to Optimus Prime or what? You wore heels and everything? But then I also thought, you know, hey, maybe she's kind of like, when you meet the president, do you dress a little nicer? You know,
exactly. So I remember when she said that, I mean, everyone was like, what's going on? You know, you remember that?
She's so girly. And that's more girly than we've had on the show at this point, because mm-hmm. like Miko is definitely not a girly girl, and RC is not a girly girl either.
See, and she's got a rough job, you know. She wears scrubs every day, you know. So.
True, true. So it's always good to, you know, wear heels for once, because yeah. Anyhow, yeah. There's a few things that it does open up an interesting conundrum with the idea of having a parent there that's going to ask parent questions like, is that safe, or it's not safe for Miko, so why is it for Jack? And you know, but you know, it kind of adds a really good conflict too, so
mm-hmm.
you definitely tell everybody is a little uncomfortable with the situation. So and as like other episodes, there's definitely a problem that this episode investigates, as a signal is found shortly after June's arrival, which Ratchet, he's going to send Bulkhead off to investigate, and RC blows off Jack to go with him to keep from being scrutinized by June, because that's always annoying, right?
Yep. Yep.
It's annoying for the teenagers, it's annoying for the Autobots.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Although I have to say, I don't think Ratchet would, you know, find it annoying. There's this doctor-nurse thing going on between them. It's respect points, man.
They're professional.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the bots aren't the only ones to find this signal. The Decepticons do, too, and Breakdown wants to prove himself after the whole mech incident, so he's dispatched to check it out. And he finds the item that he's looking for, but he's interrupted by Arachnid, because she's still hanging around, as she just arrived a couple episodes ago, so... She also wants the item that he finds, and they have a fun little smackdown.
For a while. I love this battle.
It was a good battle because you don't see her do this until, I think this is the first time she's ever done this, where she drills down and she drags him down in the dirt,
that was
too.
So cool.
That was super creepy. It totally fit her character, and I really, really liked it because the way that they showed the animation, like he goes down into it and then they have the rocks coming in.
Uh-huh.
And I was like,
being buried alive.
It was just, it was creepy. I thought, you know, I wanted to point that out, that was kind of creepy, because you thought, oh crap, because he's metal and he's going to get stuck in the plant in the ground. Mm-hmm. That is going to slow the guy down. So, you know, but it's also Breakdown, who's really strong and buff and just breaks out of there. So, which, you know, hey, it's all in the name. It's Breakdown. Mm-hmm. But back to the bots. RC and Bulkhead are on location when Miko shows up, because...
Imagine that, because she's always straggling along.
Yes.
You know?
You can't break up the Miko Bulkhead team, right?
Exactly.
Well, and because RC is the hip chick who, you know, although her first instinct is to call for a ground bridge, Miko makes a plea not to be returned to the base with the base mom. And, you know, she's like, oh, yeah, I don't want to make you subjected to that. So, yeah, okay, we'll let you tag along, but, you know, be good, you know, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
My personal take, though, was that at this point, you kind of start to see these strong parallels to June and RC.
Exactly.
Because she points out, you know, she starts, you know, she says, oh, let her tag along, you know, as long as things are safe, because this is just supposed to be recon. And then the whole, as they're walking along, you know, how Bulkhead and they start playing music, and she's like, hey, a scout is supposed to be silent but deadly.
That was funny. And they started laughing.
Yeah, it was funny because Miko and Bulkhead have been like, they're a team, man. They've been discussing this stuff. You know, Miko's from a different country, right? She's like, mm-hmm. you know, host
parents.
She's
from Japan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah. So like when it comes to being in a different area and like, you know, getting the puns and stuff like that, I'm sure that she's kind of been there. So like her integrating an alien robot from another planet, you know, she's going to kind of cue this in, these little things, because she's probably not so long ago had been the one that didn't get that, right? Sure. So I thought, oh, that it made perfect sense. But it also kind of showed how together these guys are.
I just think it's cute. It's when, because RC's just like, oh, you could feel the tension RC's been having. Just she's just like, one of these days.
Well, and she also mentions at this point that she's like the third wheel in this relationship. And,
everywhere I go, I'm the third wheel, you know?
Because that's what it's been like since June has gotten back, right? Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know where I fit. Where's that female vibe going, right?
Exactly.
They're going to upset the status quo. Oh, goodness. So our recon group run into Arachnid and break down, beating it out. And after telling Miko to stay, because she's a good little dog, not.
Exactly. When was the last time Miko stayed?
Yeah, I know. So the bots join the fight. Another nice battle ensues. RC and Arachnid, Bulkhead and Breakdown, while Miko watches from the rocks and takes pictures. Because she's going to scrap it, right? Scrapbook it. Mm-hmm. She doesn't come across as the scrapbooking type, just saying.
She must have a lot of gigs in that little phone of hers.
Yeah.
Because she takes a lot of pictures.
Or she downloads it every evening.
Yeah, that's
true. So. Okay, so eventually the bots smack the cons down. And Breakdown then activates the object that they find. I can't remember. It was like some sort of gauntlet or...
Yeah, it's the...
It's like a
magnetizing gauntlet, yeah.
Okay.
I forgot what it was called. Now.
Yeah, I wasn't paying attention to the title of it.
Yeah,
I'm a bad reviewer. No, I just thought... I thought I would just call it what it does. It's like a polarizing device.
Yeah.
Because it polarizes. It either detracts or attracts. Anyhow. So they... Breakdown activates the object and Arachnid tries to escape. But at this point, it's messing with the magnetics and the metal as the bots get stuck together and Breakdown drives off with it. And RC becomes the butt of the jokes as she's stuck on Bulkhead's backside. Help it, man.
Oh, Amy.
From here on in, it's like every little pun that's made. It's like, oh, somebody's got your back. And it's just... She becomes the butt of the jokes. It's great. And they explain the situation at that point because the cons have left. They contact the auto base and they discuss with about the results. And they, you know, they need to go find the polarity device before it's in the hands of Megatron. Because, hey, all of the Autobots are metal. This is not a good thing. RC wants to send Miko back, and the association that RC is momming it up is also played a bit. So it was like, oh man, you're just like that mom, the helicopter mom. June overhears that. She's like, am I really that bad?
I like June, though. June's cool.
She could be a whole lot worse. She really could be.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. She's like played that devil's advocate. Well, if it's safe for one person, why is it not for the other?
Exactly. Yeah. Totally different mom. You know, I love that part.
It was really good. Okay, so meanwhile, Breakdown and Arachnid again smack it down for the polarity device. Bulkhead and RC engage Arachnid because after they send Miko back, they go to go find these guys because they're not going to let Megatron get this. And they engage Arachnid when she gains the gauntlet from incapacitating Knockdown. Did I say that wrong?
Breakdown.
I put Knockdown. I don't know what it is, but I keep on getting Knockout and Breakdown messed up.
I'm pretty sure a lot of people do that. So.
And they're different people. It's Breakdown and Knockout are two. You know, Knockout because he's so nice looking, he's a Knockout. Uh-huh. I just keep on writing the wrong one in here. It's like, so aggravating. Okay,
it's all good. It's all good.
I wrote it down in my notes that way. Darn teleprompter! Boom, boom. Okay. Yeah, where's the autocorrect on that, man? Sorry, I want more intelligence in my technology. Okay, so again, another fight ensues. This time, Bulkhead and RC get pinned back-to-back fighting Cons, which I thought was lovely. Mm-hmm. And I know we've mentioned it before, but again, the fight scenes are really well choreographed, and they're always interesting. And they're just, you know, they're each unique. They all have these different things. They try to put them in different situations. I've always been really impressed with the fight scenes in Transformers Prime.
Oh, I know. It's amazing. I mean, first of all, I think Transformers Prime looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fight scenes are really engaging as well. So, I agree.
Yeah. So we go from the bots being stuck together and fighting back-to-back to the fembots stuck together. RC gains the device momentarily, and Arachnid gets it back. But in the end, the bots get the final smackdown, and they leave the scene before the Cons can get back up and go after the gauntlet. So the Autobots got the gauntlet. Yay!
Yay!
And the ending of this beautiful and frustrating mom issue wraps up with an acknowledgement of their relationships. Bulkhead and RC are Cramp and Miko style now. She's like, oh, they finish each other's sentences.
One of my favorite lines was when, you know, Ratchet was explaining everything, mm-hmm. and he's like, there's certain attraction. They are not attracted to each other.
I know. Miko getting a little bit of jealousy in there, right?
Oh, slightly.
Just a little bit. That's my best friend. Oh, goodness. And June mm-hmm. letting RC know that there's this mom thing of letting her go of her son and... You know, I didn't ever think that, you know, he'd be going off with a girl like you.
Yeah, I thought that was, I didn't think you're what type of girl that he would, you know, replace me with,
yeah. Just a little bit different, man. Hey, mm-hmm. It's new and hip. And Breakdown, he returns back to the Cons with an Arachnid stuck to his backside, who says, it's good to be back, with a little smirk.
It's a very punful episode, yeah. That's for sure. Yeah.
Very, very. Mm-hmm. So, relationship dynamics, thoughts?
It's going to be a learning experience for those two, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. It's good to see Arachnid has finally joined the Con ranks. She definitely belongs.
Yes,
with all the creepy things that she's done since she's been introduced to the planet Earth. So, and yeah, the human moments in this episode just made me laugh.
There's a lot, like I said, it was very punful. And
being a mom myself, I guess I just like
yeah,
see
you
June's
definitely.
Situation go, oh, June, bless you. I was like, hey, can I join the club? Hey, can I go on missions too? Hey, look, I brought sandwiches. just funny. It's just the funny little things. And I thought, oh, yeah, I could totally see myself doing that. I'm sorry. My kid's going, Mom, please don't come here again. Oh, goodness. So that's our review. How can the good followers of RFC find you now, Nicole?
Yay, I'm actually back on online. So
she's got video this time.
Yay. You could go find me on Twitter at Beatles Diva. Beatles like the band, not the bug. Cool. And or you could find me on Facebook at Nicole D. Hale. Awesome. And those are basically the two places you could find me. So.
Yep. Awesome.
What about you, Amy?
I am on Twitter as Lady of Rec. I tweet comic stuff a lot because, of course, I run the Underbase, and mm-hmm. we review Transformers comics there. So I like to stay up on the news, and I tweet it out as soon as I can. So if you want to be there, you want to find out stuff as it's happening, if I find out as soon as it's happening, I usually tweet it out there. So, but you can also buy my fantastic Transformer-inspired t-shirts on Etsy at Wrecked Apparel as well.
There you go.
And there's
some fun stuff there.
Oh, yeah.
There's some fun stuff.
So. Wreck and Rule. It's classic. Mm-hmm. Yep. So we'll see you on our next review. Thanks for tuning in.
Aloha.
Ciao.
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 I'm running away from home. My parents are mean.
Where will you go?
I'm not sure, but I'll show them.
That's right. You'll show them how mean you can be.
Bumblebee.
Isn't it better to try to solve problems instead of running away from them?
Maybe I could try talking to my parents again. Yeah, tell him how you feel. And remember, running away
leads nowhere. Now I know.
And knowing is half the battle.
The Transformers!
Hello, this is the RFC computer. For some reason I am listening to a radio, and that radio is broken. The radio only plays clips, which seem to be strategically chosen, from RFC's 14-year history.
Ha ha ha!
I need to call the radio repair guy. Here, let me play it for you. It's very odd, you see. It's almost like an RFC clip show. But why would my radio do that?
Hello and welcome to the first broadcast of Radio Free Cybertron. I'm your host and friend, Brian Kilby. Some of you may know me and some of you probably don't. In fact, I believe that most of you wouldn't. You may know me, though, from alt.toys.transformers, or you may see me around on IRC. I am 20 years old. I'm a college student here in northwestern North Carolina, and I disc jockey for a small AM radio station here called WWWC. I am an avid Transformers collector and an all-around good guy.
Greetings, trans fans. This is the ATT Buzz. You know, the news group has hit hard times lately. Intelligent discussion has given way to flames and fights. And the reason is pretty obvious. It's Beast Machines. This week was especially bad, with the revelations that Silverbolt is the Viacon Thrust, and Rhinox is the Viacon Tankor. Oh, and Cybertron was once completely organic, and the Maximals, thanks to the Oracle, are now on a mission to get it back that way. You know, as nasty as all these story arcs seem, it's nothing compared to the bad vibes that go through ATT right now on a daily basis. In fact, don't be surprised if we see an Alt Toys Beast Wars group arise before all of this is over.
You're listening to Radio Free Cybertron. Your host, Turin.
Hello and welcome to Radio Free Cybertron. It's Friday, December 17th, 1999. Just 8 more days until Christmas. Let's all wish for Transformers under the tree this year. This will be the first Christmas I've spent at home in a long time. In the last few years, I just went skiing. I haven't really been into the obligatory public holidays lately. Most of my family's rugged individualists anyway, so we don't mind just blowing off the holiday and going and doing something fun.
Oh, and thank Primus that Optimus Minor did not make the show. I can see it now. One of those monkey kids, Una, or her boy brother, finds the transmetal driver and the nightmare begins. Oh, and finally, only ATT can take a thread titled The Autobot's Hidden Master and turn it into a rambling, raving debate over Megatron's origin, symbols of slavery, and pink rabbits. I love this news group, and that's the ATT Buzz. I'm John DeLuna.
In a time of turmoil and poverty, in a country of all talk and no action, there stands one candidate for president that towers above the rest. A born leader with proven results, interested only in positive change for this country and all its citizens.
Optimus Prime, leader of the Autobots.
Optimus Prime for president. A proven leader. Paid for by Optimus Prime.
Hello, this is Rob from the Bot Files for RFC. Today I'm going to be reviewing G1, Bumblebee, and Cliffjumper. Well, not exactly G1. They're the recent keychains put out by Fun for All. They're really the same toy as before, just they got a little extra little loop of plastic on their, I guess that'd be their left shoulder, with a little detachable keychain attached. And it's not really much of a keychain, it's just like a little chain that's got a little clip where you can attach to really anything. But, aside from that, they're really the same toys. Although I think Cliffjumper's a little darker red, Bumblebee's more of a cardinal yellow, but ah, well, there's what you remember.
View of Battle Unicorn. First of all, I'm going to talk about the Beast Mode. First thing that kind of strikes your eye is the translucent plastic blue, which is really cool. Also, the mane, which has some orange and red vacuumized metal, which is really sweet, and a point that I definitely like. The gimmick in this mode is the headbutt action, which is lame. Really lame. But it basically, you turn the knob on the shoulder, and the head goes down.
Thanks, John. We will have the tank ore review coming up here in a few moments. But first up, we will have the review of Tiger Hawk by my friend, Goldimus Prime.
Tiger Hawk is a transmetal to Fusor. Tiger Hawk Beast Mode appears to be a white tiger and what seems to be eagle Fusor. The box calls him a Transmetal 2, but I believe the term Transmetal Fusor works better for the character.
Boys and girls, your attention please. Presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of an amazing and incredible personality.
Radio Free Cybertron!
About a week ago, I came back from Otfic. For those not in the know, that's the official Transformers Collectors Convention. We call it Otfic for short. Make sure to stress that it's fic. Otherwise, it's vulgar. But we did go to the convention, or I went to the convention myself last week. Went alone. Had the worst experience in my life in many ways. I rode the bus. I have learned a valuable lesson. Never ride the bus. The trip there was fine. It was okay. It was a little cramped, but I'm a big guy. But the trip back, it was interesting. Thought I was going to get stabbed in Knoxville, Tennessee. At the Greyhound station. The police routinely go by those places for a reason, because they're seedy, grimy pits of despair. Now, the place, if you've never been in a bus station in the big city, now Cincinnati is, Cincinnati had a nice station. Let me say that first. Cincinnati was clean, huge. But every other place I went, except for Johnson City, Tennessee, which was just sort of I guess it was sort of depressed. That's probably the best way to put it. But other than Cincinnati and Johnson City, Tennessee, every place else I went looked really, really ghetto. Not to say that there's anything wrong with being in a ghetto. There certainly is not. It's not the most preferential environment to be in, I'm certain. But it was pretty down and out. And I'm amazed that I got out with my life. That's not that bad, but I'm never riding the bus again. The trip back, I rode behind a transgendered person, which, again, there's nothing wrong with being transgendered, I don't suppose. But being that I live in a small town with conservative values, it's, well, pretty much something I'm not experienced with. The person kept tapping me on the back and asking me if I was going to where they were going, and I was. But thankfully, right off of that bus, I got on another bus and went home. When I did get home, my cat was very thankful to see me, and I was very thankful to be alive. I got a Unicron brand new as soon as it came out. I was like, yeah! I'm going to be the first person in the country to review this thing, but no, it never works out that way, does it? Eh, oh well.
And there's Earth, of course, and Cybertron. Well, Cybertron's gone in the first episode. Spoiler alert. Crap, I'm sorry. But then again, you pretty much know the concept already. The whole idea is they're traveling to save Cybertron and blah, blah, blah. So you got Cybertron keys for the guys that are native to Cybertron, and you got the Earth keys, which guys are... I'm kind of confused on that one. Like, are they native to Earth, or is it just because they've been on Earth that they get the Earth energy? It's probably that. And there's going to be a couple more planets revealed as time goes, but kind of up in the air to what those would be themed about. Maybe we have an Animorph planet. That'll go over well. And we'll have a... We'll have the Abraham Lincoln planet where all the Transformers have really long hats on and they give long speeches. We'll have Tennis Planet and all the Transformers play tennis. It'll be nice.
Hey, you're listening to Radio Free Cybertron. This is Brian Kilby, December 13th, 2008. No, I didn't say December 13th, 2002. Not December 13th, 2003. Or even December 13th, 1999. This is 2008. It's actually been about 4 years since I sat behind the microphone here, but I uncovered something quite special. And you are listening to Radio Free Cybertron. This is your host, Brian Kilby. A little late. We've missed a week, and a lot of stuff has happened. We've had a new Transformers cartoon, Transformers Cybertron. Transformers Cybertron is the third cartoon in the series of Transformers Armada and Transformers Energon. So this is the first time we've had three series tied together in such a way in America, and it's been pretty cool, even though the series itself kind of sucks. Also, a few other things have happened since last week. BotCon's been held in Texas, Kentucky, Rhode Island, Ohio, and California. We've had a Transformers movie, which is kind of cool that, you know, never really thought that would happen. But, you know, we've had a Transformers movie, and we've had a Transformers sequel since last week because, well, the first Transformers movie made tons and tons of money. And also we've had another cartoon. It's amazing. Transformers Animated. Yeah, and, you know, that's kind of a funny name, I know, but I think if we give it a shot, it'll prove to be pretty good. Also, what else have we had? We've had basically a full-scale G1 revival in this subline called Transformers Classics, and it's been followed up in the Transformers Universe line, which is personally a favorite of mine, you know, has been for the last couple of years since it started. We've also, in the fandom, you know, we've had a whole slew, and a slew is a very southern word, I know, but I am southern, a slew of Transformers Internet radio shows. They're calling themselves podcasts. I don't know why, but we welcome our Transformers Internet radio show brethren. Let's see here. There have been lots of fans that have come in since last week because of the success of Transformers Cybertron and, of course, Transformers the movie. Not to be confused with our favorite 1986 Transformers movie. And its new sequel in Transformers Animated, but lots of new fans, lots of new stuff going on here at Radio Free Cybertron. We're glad to be back. It's been a long week, but we are here for you.
Oh, I just found out that my radio is defective. That's why it's playing this crap. I'll just have Brian buy me a new one.
The deadly inhumanoid Tendril lashes out, and the forest comes alive as the Redwoods help their scientist friends.
Thirsty Redwoods!
Inhumanoids! Inhumanoids!
The evil that lies within!
Redland and other figures sold separately from Hasbro.
Inhumanoids!
So we're back. You know, as I started off on the show mentioning, it's our 14th anniversary show. 14 years. I first posted RFC October 15th, 1999. That was like last millennium, last century. So that was a while ago, and most of us are old farts, except for Diecast. Diecast is a little bit younger than the rest of us, but not that much younger.
Oh, yeah, not much.
Like 31?
31.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's about the same age.
Yeah, it's close enough.
It's not like it's like 21 or something.
In 99, I was in 10th grade, I think.
It's not like he's Peter.
Not helping.
In 99, I was a senior in at the senior home of South Fort Lauderdale. But, God, so much stuff has happened since we actually started the show. You probably heard in the segment that led into this one, we'd mentioned some stuff. Like, John was complaining about Beast Machines and what Beast Machines was doing to Alt Toys Transformers back in 99. And the funniest part of that that John said is, like, don't be surprised if we have an Alt-Toys Transformers Beast Wars by the time this is all said and done. Which, you know, really, people were complaining about it. Beast Machines was an upheaval. It wasn't the upheaval that Beast Wars was. But it was certainly a drastic change from Beast Wars. It'd be kind of like Transformers Prime being, I would say this is unfair, but Transformers Prime getting a Season 4 and Season 4 basically being Rescue Bots. Or Rescue Heroes. That's a stretch, but that's how people took it to begin with.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess.
But it was an upheaval.
Okay. It was an upheaval, but I think there were other reasons.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But so much stuff has happened since then. I mean, Car Robots, Robots in Disguise, that entirely happened in the course of history since we started. And that was a complete sea change for Transformers. We went back to vehicles. And, you know, I really expected that to be sort of like, we're back to vehicles now. What Beast series is coming after this? But, you know, mm-hmm. There wasn't one. That was pretty much the shift. We went to vehicles and mostly it. I mean, certainly we've had Beasts since then, but they have not been the focus of any line that I can think of.
Predacons.
I mean, going back to vehicles brought a lot of people back to Transformers.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and that's right, GD. Rob, vehicles brought you back.
Yeah. Armada Supercon Prime specifically brought me back.
I was one of those guys that was pissed off. I was pissed off and happy at the same time. I'm like, vehicles are back. They suck.
They didn't suck at first.
Luckily, I kind of ignored Robots in Disguise as a toy line for whatever reason. So, you know, Armada was a pleasant surprise. I think that was too early for me to be waist-deep in Gundam. I'm not quite sure why I didn't buy any Robots in Disguise, but... Mm.
I bought everything from Robots in Disguise. That was, I think, pretty much the first series. Maybe Beast Wars, everything after Transmetals. I was pretty convinced
about. Yeah, I guess who was the sucker that bought it from Japan?
Chris Triplett. I think Chris Triplett bought it at a convention before it was released.
I remember coming off of Beast Machines being just so totally beat down by that series and just not enjoying myself.
There's some highs and some lows.
Yeah, I think, and then we got Robots in Disguise. And there's a lot of lows in that series. I was happy to get Robots in Disguise, and we got all those great, wonderful toys. And then we go to Armada, and there we go again. Rob said he was pleasantly surprised, and that's not two words I would put with Armada.
So I thought for a second you were being sarcastic, because you're 180 degrees out of phase with reality, Don.
See, here's what's interesting, though, is that, like, Beast Machines has stood the test of time in the sense that series is actually good. We were just too
passionate about Beast Wars at the time.
We were too asshole-less, about Beast Wars to know it. You know, we drank the Kool-Aid, we bought into Bob and Larry, and, you know, we were not going to accept anything but that. You know, we got into the drama of it, of the behind-the-scenes stuff. And Robots in Disguise came along, and we're like, okay, this is something different. And you know what? It doesn't stand the test of time.
No.
The anime is fine, and the U.S. dub, I get it. I know there's a lot of people that love that. Those toys are not good.
Oh, exactly. The toys, I can't think of a toy off the top of my head from that series that was original to that series that doesn't suck.
Yeah.
But, you know, after that, we got Armada, and we had basically proclaimed Armada on a early show, like, around 2000, when we, like, looked back at the previous 10 years. We basically proclaimed Armada the best series, the best Transformers series of all time, and I still stand by that. Maybe not the best figures, but with originality and ingenuity, I still think Armada is close to being the top, if not the top. And Don's just wanting to punch me in the face right now.
I think overall, I think if you are going to take everything into account, the show, the originality, the figures, take it all into account, I think that's the best Blitz, hands down.
Yeah, but...
Can I take it all into account and throw it in a trash can?
You'd be wrong, Don.
You'd be wrong, Don.
So also to Piston off, later on we got, you know, sort of back into the G1-ish sort of vibe, because Armada, Energon, and Cybertron, you know, back to vehicles, but not very G1-ish, because, of course, somehow G1 is the standard that we have to judge everything. We got alternators, and I would put alternators just above Robots in Disguise.
Totally.
In my
this
list.
Is where I get angry, because
the alternators.
Alternators.
Alternators is another "we drank the Kool-Aid" line,
pretty much,
because we got it all into robots, and we thought, okay, this, the vehicles are great, you know, and let's get it into G1er, woohoo! And alternators come out, and we're like, oh my god, it's like real cars that turn into robots. It's totally like G1. Oh man, and we kept buying them, and we're like, these are kind of crap, but we have to keep buying them.
I started off, I really like Smokescreen. I still, to this day, I still think Smokescreen's a pretty darn good toy.
I think if Smokescreen had been the only toy to come out of that line,
I would be fine with it.
Probably would have been like, that was really neat. Boy, it would have been cool if they did more, and we could just dream that they did more, instead of them actually having created more crap. That came out of
it really time. Trailed off. It trailed off pretty quick.
And rapidly. I mean, they just drove off a cliff. They totally Thelma and Louise'd that entire series of figures.
So where Masterpiece is going these days with toys that are really nicely engineered and we're getting like one or two a year, they didn't do that with alternators. We got, you know...
So, Blitz
that. I mean, it wasn't like 70 toys a year. I mean, it was probably 5 or 6.
Okay, but in terms of a comparison to how much it took to engineer the figures properly, and then for them to be, you know, for the price point and everything, they blitzed them.
Comparatively speaking,
they blitzed them.
But yes,
All I'm gonna say is, if you're buying the Masterpiece small scale figures and you like them, and you don't like alternators, which is a very close cousin of what we're seeing now, something is not balancing out.
I would put it this way. Masterpiece, more fine art. Most of the later alternators, more Crayola drawings. I would say they're more primitive.
Here's the thing. Alternators was trying to be actual vehicles that turned into sort of G1 characters. Alternators is trying to be anime style Transformers that turn into anime style
characters
and things like that. I don't think they're slavishly trying to adhere to actual vehicles as much. I think they're trying to be more anime style. And I'm fine with that.
I knew this would be controversial, by the way.
You know.
I look at the alternators as like the pre-movie line. I mean, I think this is where the evolution of the figure went. If you would go from G1 to alternators and then to the movie figures,
you would probably split your wrist. That's how I would respond.
Is that an
it's a total evolution?
If I had G1 alternators in the movie figures to like live by, I wouldn't be a Transformers fan.
Yeah, I think I would have myself.
I would have given up.
But I do agree with you, Diecast, in that alternators is the line that taught me that there is a level of complexity I don't want my Transformers to exceed, and the movie line in very many ways followed through on that.
Yeah,
so maybe Diecast is right in that respect.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the series. I think if we'd stayed with Smokescreen, maybe a couple of the other figures, like Silver Streak, which is the same.
Hound was pretty nice.
Hound
was
okay.
Trax is a very good figure.
Trax is okay.
Rodimus was a good figure.
I never got Rodimus or Mirage.
I'm
with you on Trax. Trax was that good.
I never found Mirage, and I never bought Rodimus. So
yeah, I think if you had gotten that mold, you would have seen.
Would have changed my mind.
Yeah, well, it would have definitely gave you another positive to look at, as good as that mold is.
Yeah, but I knew that would be controversial. I just had to bring it up because it's, you know, the show has a much more diversity of opinion than it had a couple of years ago.
This is reminding me that there are so many examples of the entire fandom drinking Kool-Aid.
Oh, yeah.
Where does this happen? Where we will, like, do this sort of mass just mind wipe and go, oh, this is amazing, and then like realize later, oh.
I haven't realized that it's not yet, but I would almost be willing to say animated. I love animated.
I love animated so much,
and I can't tell you, I can tell you why, but in 5 or 6 years, that opinion may drift a little bit, so I would say animated's closest to that, but animated's great. More Than Meets the Eye, the new comic, is probably veering that way. It's like it's really, 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 really good, but it's so good that sometimes we may, you know,
my fault.
Yeah, like I compare it to the best of other comics, because and I don't grade it on a scale, but maybe that's not fair to other comics.
Mm. So it's like, you know, a lot of people hold SH Figure Arts, which is another line.
Yeah. I know what that one is.
To a higher degree of what they're expecting. And sometimes we start to hold this, we get all this great stuff that's supposed to be at a higher level, and then when something comes out that's not trying to be that same level of complexity or focus, we say, oh, that's not as good, but it's good for what's level. It's not trying to be this extra nice stuff.
Yeah. Other things we got that came out in the time period since RFC came out, the entire Dreamwave universe.
Oh, God. Thankfully, it rose and fell.
No, it wasn't all bad. Just
it broke under its own weight.
Mostly bad.
I have to say, I enjoyed the Armada comic.
Until Furman got on it.
Until much more than I did the television series, and I was actually enjoying Energon.
Oh, yeah, the Armada comic's great when Chris Arancini was writing it, but when Furman got on board, it kind of went downhill. And I kind of hate that.
That is another one of those where it's like, I think the fandom drank the Kool-Aid really early and then, like, got over it. Like, it wasn't strong enough.
I think the fandom probably drank the Kool-Aid on that when they first saw that image that was in Wizard Magazine. Mm-hmm. When Pat Lee did the art. I was like, holy crap, look at that. And he actually got the license somehow.
Transformers. But, I mean, that's one of those deals where it's like, at the time for like G1, we were like, holy crap, it's really G1. I think that since that time, and I think it's one of the reasons that the G1 has lost its novelty, is we've gotten so many things since then that have been different but just as good, if not better. I would usually say better. I don't know. That's one of those ones where it's like early on we were really sold on it, and then when we kept getting these images of oversized, cracked characters, we were like, well, this is not...
The one thing I appreciate about Dreamwave, even though they didn't necessarily get paid, a lot of artists got a chance to come into prominence.
The higher ups got paid. Don't worry.
Yeah, but like, you know, there are people we know that actually got featured in stuff. That was great because, you know, they got their art out there. Didn't get a dime out of it, but you know,
some of them did eventually. You know, in the sense that it got them other work.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
For all its faults, Dreamwave was an important stepping stone getting to where we are now. You know. It's the whole, if we didn't have Dreamwave, would we have what we have today?
Yeah.
We might have gotten earlier.
Yeah.
Dreamwave might have actually been a stumbling block. Yeah, that's how I see it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Brian on that. I think it's possible that Dreamwave came in and oversold itself and its ability to create and may have kept another company from producing stuff.
I see Dreamwave being like Fox having the rights to the Fantastic Four. Like, yeah. If Marvel had it, they could probably do something really good. But Fox isn't. Yeah, so Fox is going to make another crappy movie. So
it's been Foxed up.
It is pretty Foxed up, though. That's pretty much right. Or Sony having Spider-Man. No offense. Mm-hmm. Even though I liked the last movie.
That's fine. I'm okay with that. I'm a little annoyed that Fox still has Fantastic Four.
Yeah. But, God, so much other stuff. The entire Unicron trilogy. Start to finish, the whole kit and caboodle.
Wow.
It is what it is. It's a collection of really great stuff, i.e. the toys, and really crappy stuff, i.e. most of the fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of neat and interesting ideas brought to the table, and a lot of toys you can still find at Goodwill, even though some of them are pretty good. My Goodwill still overrun with that stuff. Let's see here. The movies. Can't forget those.
Wow.
And that was such a huge paradigm shift for the Transformers, because so much was basically impacted by the movies. You know, even to this day, I mean, animated was very much influenced by the movie. Maybe not the fiction, but the designs were pretty well, you know, really animated-y, cartoony movie designs. Prime much more closely tied to the movie. But the figures, you know, the bags of knives, you know, that whole sort of look started with the movies. And, you know, it was a great seller for the 2007 movie, but it's continually gone downhill toy-wise, and it's kind of, I think, ultimately been a detriment to the Transformers, at least as a toy line.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. You know,
10, 15 years from now, oh, man, they're going to be, like, just trying to get more toys that look like that. Remember when they used to look like they would kill you if you touched them?
What were you going to say, Diecast?
I was going to say that this is another part, the movies that have done a lot for the fandom and to bring, you know, Transformers to the forefront.
Oh, it absolutely has. It absolutely has. I think for Hasbro, it's brought in a lot of money, not necessarily from toys, but licensing dollars. I mean, certainly, you know, you can't go to Walmart without seeing Transformers shirts or Transformers book bags and stuff. But I mean, as their bread and butter, the stuff that they make their money on day in, day out, you know, I don't think the toys do that well. They do better than G.I. Joe, I can say.
And this is another thing, like, they just signed another deal with a company to do that type of stuff, like apparel and shoes and stuff like that, and that's easy money that they're making because it's a license. Then that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Transformers pregnancy test. The Autobot. The Autobot, if you're pregnant, it's a Decepticon if you're not.
I would buy that.
You know, I think the movie design for the toys, yeah, there was a lot of overcomplexity just for overcomplexity's sake. There was a lot of shell formers and kibble problems. But I think if you look at each line, each year, each line, you'll see there were some standout gems in each line.
Oh, yeah, true.
And,
true.
You know, and I think they brought us a lot of good things that we wouldn't be seeing in, like, Generations or Classics now.
A lot of engineering, they learned a lot of things in designing these toys.
Right.
They absolutely did. That's very true, Don. And I'm not, you know, I'm not picking on the design team, the engineering team. I mean, they did what they did. I mean, the toy, they didn't, you know, they had the toys they had to design the toys based on the look, and that's what they did. And we got some great stuff out of it, and we got a lot of not so great stuff out of it.
We've got more not so great stuff on the way.
Maybe. let's see here. Animated, you know, talking about the Kool-Aid. I still like the taste of that Kool-Aid, but hasn't killed me yet. But Animated came out, everything with that. Prime came out.
Prime was very good. I was drinking that Kool-Aid. I was not having the Animated Kool-Aid.
I
kind of regret it now because people talk so highly of it. But
I mean, I don't want to overuse that phrase. I mean, I think Kool-Aid specifically is like when something is crap and under any other circumstances you would look at it and go, wow, that's crap. And, you know, I don't think Animated is that per se. I don't think it's always aspects of things. The toys are fine for Animated. I think the show may be considered a little, you know, it may have been given a little more grace just because it had a lot of cool cameos.
And it wasn't Cybertron, honestly.
Yes, and it wasn't Cybertron.
Beast Machines held in high regard to now, not so much then because it wasn't Beast Wars. Animated held in high regard because it wasn't Cybertron. And then Prime, to begin with, not held in that high regard because it wasn't Animated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting how those things work out. Anything else like really notable? I'm certain I'm missing something. There are lots of games. Well, so the War for Cybertron, Fall of Cybertron.
And Armada
games.
Classics. The whole
the G1 revival, basically. Most of I don't remember when the first reissue toy came out, when the reissue Optimus came out. I'm pretty sure it's probably before the first episode of RSC, but so many Encore and commemorative figures have come out, you know, basically back in the day. I can go back and read posts of mine from Alt-Toys Transformers in, like, the late 90s, when people were saying, why don't they bring Optimus Prime out again, or why don't they bring out Soundwave? And I'm like, you idiot, they'll never do that.
Yeah.
I was completely and totally wrong.
And then you got more. Now, there's people that have built houses out of that Prime.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are saying, well, why don't we get, like, a super, you know, articulate, intricate, masterpiece style design of these figures? You idiot! That'll never happen. Like, in 03, you know?
Well, in 03, though, and even in that time, like, that didn't make sense. Like, that, there was a time when that wouldn't have happened. The marketplace changed. You know, things changed to cause those things. It's not like that was a stupid thing to say, no, they won't do that. I mean, at the time, it didn't. I mean, even thinking around Beast Wars time, I think we all sort of had felt that, you know, cars and vehicles had seen their day. And that was, you know, that was it. We're into animals now, and when this dies, then Transformers will be dead for another 10 or 15 years. You know, and we'll have to wait. I mean, because that's all we had to go on. But, we got lucky.
One big thing that we talk about all the time, and I wrote this down, and I completely skipped over it. I mentioned it earlier. We got, basically, OTFCC. So BotCon completely changed hands. BotCon ended for a year. It ended up being official for 2 years, taken over by OTFCC when Glenn sort of took over. Then Glenn lost the license. We got an unofficial BotCon, and FunPub got the license to BotCon, and they created the Transformers Collectors Club. I mean, so that's, like, again, like a total huge deal that has happened since we did this.
Yeah, since we started this. Yep. Yeah.
Total shift in, like, the way that, you know, the fandom, like, the official fandom has been managed.
And it's become its own, instead of just a bunch of people meeting and gathering every year, it's legit.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, you know, we see stuff, you know, coming out, you know, we not see all this much stuff, and every year we see stuff coming out in 6 months, stuff planned for the next lines, the next animated series, whatever the case may be.
You look at the Transformers subscription service. We were talking about Jackpot, and I was talking crap about Jackpot, and I take all of that back, because, you know, back in the day, BotCon, we got two toys, and we didn't know what they were until BotCon.
Right.
Now
all
we get
all we knew was a size, class, and maybe a price point.
And if somebody, like, spooky leaked, like, the leaked the images, people lost their shit.
Mm-hmm.
People went crazy about that stuff. Now we have, like, usually six figures in the set. We have five or six different figures in, like, the souvenir sets. Now we have the subscription service. And I use the term lovingly, fan wankery stuff. The stuff, like, that we never would have expected. Like, a new Jackpot figure, that's not going to hit retail. Or Ultra Mammoth. You know, it's... I love the term fan wank, and I say it in all sincere, loving honesty, because I like that term, because it's a chance to give us stuff that we really want that we might not deserve, honestly.
Yeah, and otherwise get, of course.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You know, we can talk about the FunPub management in terms of, like, okay, stole my credit card, blah, 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 all that stuff happens. I'm not discrediting that, but I'm just saying... this is something that we would not have seen had there not been a change in hands.
Yeah.
And I will challenge anyone to say that, oh, we'll be better off if we didn't have it. No.
No.
F you, go light yourself on fire, because I would at least rather have the option to get the stuff than to have it not produced at all.
Yeah.
And in terms of the cost is not bad. You know, how much is, I mean, in terms of what you can get, is it expensive, you know, for, like, the full Primus package?
Absolutely.
Sure. But you know that those figures are going to be available.
It's not a cheap hobby.
Yeah, and it's not a cheap hobby. But, again, it's like, you know, what did I pay, $100 or something to go to BotCon 2001, you know, to get those figures? But, again, it was two, and I was buying them blind. So, you know.
And plus now we have an idea of what the set is, what the figures are. So you have some ability to say, okay, I like the set so far, or I don't like it. You know, right. at least you have some options of before you walk in the door.
Yeah.
Now, having been to so many BotCons, I do kind of miss the simpler days.
Oh, I get that.
Yeah. But now I'm more informed now than I ever could have been in John and Carl's day, because they didn't get the information from Hasbro to the last minute.
And, you know, honestly, go ahead, JD.
No, I was just going to say, and that's just a factor of being unofficial. I mean, we're getting this benefit because it's an official thing versus an unofficial thing. And, you know, I don't know. I just, like, I know that a lot of people love to hate Fun Pub. It's fun to hate Fun Pub. But, I mean, I think we get a better convention and we get better products than we would otherwise had they have not taken over. The argument can be made that another company might do it better, but this is what's happening now. This is what we have in front of us. So,
but, yes, so much has changed in the last 14 years. It's insane. When we started doing this, we had G1, Beast Wars, the beginning of Beast Machines. We had the G1 comic, the Blackthorn comic, the G2 comic, the UK comic, and the Japanese series, and a couple of manga that most people never actually watched before. The Transformers universe is so much richer, so much bigger than it was years ago. And, you know, back when we started, when I started doing the show in, you know, the 90s, getting content each week, I basically had to pull it all out of my brain. There was very little news. So basically, mm-hmm. I had to basically literally write a show, write content. It wasn't like this talking head format now where we can all just sit around and talk about something. You know, well, technology wasn't even there then. But, you know, there's just, we could do a whole show now and not write any original content.
Hey, we had the technology to sit around and talk. You just had to have enough dongles and enough phones plugged into each other.
I was listening to the episode that you and Heath did, and Sue Blue did a stinger on that. And mm-hmm. I'm like, holy crap, they recorded this on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you want to go back and if for whatever reason you want to go back into the archive and listen to any of the interviews,
that was June of 2001. RFC didn't play a lot of the interviews. There was a couple that we played. A
couple you played, yeah.
Because that was pretty much your guys' thing, and you know, I did my thing, you guys did yours. We were friends, but we weren't like as tight as, you know.
Yeah, but we wanted you to play them. that's why we did them.
Oh, I didn't know that. I would have played them. You just had to ask.
Yeah. No, we thought you would want to pick them up, but
anyway. I don't want to steal content. I still don't. That's why I don't listen to Transformers podcasts. I don't steal content. Yeah. But I will listen. I do listen to Nebulon Pirate Radio now, because we're going to start airing that show each week.
It's just interesting if you look at it from a point of view. In the last 14, 15 years, we've gone from trading VHS tapes. To actually being able to get Headmasters, Master Force, and Victory on DVD.
Yeah.
And possibly Blu-ray next year for Victory, subtitled.
So okay, the world we're in now, even if you don't want to buy it, it's all on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, season 4, the or five, however you want to describe it, the Tommy Kennedy Power Master Prime puppet season. I like got that. I was on Rockman 666's website, and I'm like, oh, I think I'll buy that. And I bought it, and I got it, you know, a couple weeks later after he actually sat down and recorded it. He had to dub it. He had to redub the tape, and the quality was crap. You know, it was fine for the time, but I still have the tapes, and they just look like total crap. That's all we had.
I mean, mm-hmm. I was trading Kmart exclusive Legend Bumblebees for VHS copies of Master Force and Victory, because I had no idea what these series was. I was just getting them for a $4 Legends figure.
It was so different. In a way, I kind of miss it, but in most ways, I would never, ever, ever go back.
No.
I like knowing what's going on out there, so I can plan purchases and such.
I like living in a world that's had Robots in Disguise in it, that's had Alternators in it, that's had Unicron Trilogy, it's had Animated, it's had Beast Machines, it's had Beast Wars, it's had Prime. It's so much richer now, and it's a great fandom. It's a great universe to be a fan of. I don't love all of it, but I do love all of it. I mean, you know, it's sort of this weird dichotomy. You know, on one hand, I bought it. I religiously bought the stuff if I could find it. But I didn't necessarily appreciate it, but that's because I feel entitled to judge it, in a sense, because I love it so much. I'm a fan. I mean, it's all there is to it, and there's a lot of stuff that's gone on, and it's, like I said, it's a great universe to be a fan of. Wouldn't give it up for anything. Not Sailor Moon, not Pokemon.
Not Kim Possible.
It's
oh my
a good
God.
Show. Do you ever call Kim that? Do you ever call her Kim Possible?
No, if I say something like that, she's like, Massey!
Oh my God, that's awesome.
She's, yeah, occasionally, it's awesome. Kim will say Massey occasionally. Like, if we see a fan somewhere, it's the Massey brand, she'll point at it and laugh. She loves you, Don.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Kim's pretty awesome. Go ahead, Don. So, yeah. Oh, we lost video. So, lots of awesome stuff has happened. I love Transformers. What about you guys?
Yeah.
It's okay.
I bought way too much of it, but I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Hurts my wallet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ask Don about any toy. He'll tell you about the three that he used to own and who he sold them to.
That's me. Because Don's kept most of his stuff. I've sold most of my stuff.
Oh, he's got one, but he sold the other two.
That's probably true.
If Transformers didn't come back, I don't think there would be. I don't think I'd have any toys.
Define coming back.
Yeah. I mean, it's always been around. It never stopped, dude.
It seemed like it stopped forever, but it was like a couple of years.
Well, no, I mean,
no,
Beast
never
Wars.
Stopped, dude. There's no break. It literally no.
In the U.S. In the U.S. there was a very brief break, very, yeah, very, very brief.
Months.
G1. 18. Before we got the G2 releases, there was nothing, Jetty. It was a vast wasteland of nothing.
And after G2,
from the end of G2 to Machine Wars, there's only like a year to 18 months.
Well, in the G2 to Beast Wars came before Machine Wars.
Did it?
From the end of G1 before we got anything with G2, there was nothing.
No, nothing. Yeah.
But you might find old stock on a drugstore shelf somewhere.
Yeah, but none of us are old enough to remember that, Don.
I am. But yeah, so like I said, it's been a great 14 years. I probably won't be doing this again in 14 years. I'll probably be doing Radio Free Zoids or something, but...
Zoids. We'll be doing Radio Free
Visionaries.
Oh, God.
Radio Free and Humanoids.
We'll be talking about old people stuff by then. Radio Free Lawn Care.
I won't be 50 yet in 14 years. That's not too old.
I'll be dead. I don't care what you do.
14 years ago, would you have thought you would still be doing this, though?
He wasn't still.
Okay, so, XV's not on. We were going to argue about this. I do want to point this out. So I've gone back and checked. I've gone back, and the whole archive of every episode that we have is now at tfradio.net. So go to archives, go to Radio Free Cybertron. Every single episode we've ever posted, with the possible exception of one, but I'm not actually sure now that we're missing that episode. Which is kind of sad, but, you know, I wasn't keeping good records.
It's a radio station in Nigeria.
Yeah, basically, that's exactly right.
You're definitely missing an episode.
So, how many episodes did you do back in the day?
We did at least two, and I know one of those is a missing episode.
I've got one of them. So
you've got one, but there's another one that we did that's, like, the funniest one that we did that's missing, which is unfortunate.
But, so you know, some people... I'm not going to name names, have pointed out, oh yeah, we're not the longest running consecutive Transformers podcast, and that's true. Well, you know, for the most part, we did have a break of a few months here and there from like 2002 to 2003. 2003, we had a break of about 6 months between episodes. We had a couple episodes in 04, we had one episode in 05, and nothing in 06 and 07. I recorded something in 08 and posted it, but it wasn't like, oh, we're back. And we started again in 09, so there was about 2 years of pretty much nothing. So, but it's not really as long a stretch as we give it credit for being. I mean, it's...
Yeah, we make it sound like it was, you know, the whole decade, but it really wasn't that long.
It was a couple of years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a lot of stuff going on. I was working like 80 or 90 hours a week. The reason why I stopped doing the show is because I got a job after, you know, mom died, and it just pretty much threw myself into work. But, you know, had things worked out differently, I might not be married now.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have a lot more Transformers.
So, Brian, basically you'd be me, and I wouldn't wish that.
I love you, Don. I really do.
I would not wish that. I thought by now I'd be married and have kids, and it's like... I'm married and have kids,
but Brave keeps getting in the way.
Yep.
It's like
having to buy all these toys.
Every time I decide to start in the past years, it's like, okay, I'm tired of this. I'm going to stop buying this stuff. I need to get it. I need to get on with my life. Ooh, what's that?
I don't know, Don. I think you can have it all, bro.
Yeah.
Look at JD. JD is like.
Apparently.
JD is the Tom Cruise of this podcast, believe it or not.
Cruise? What, like I'm crazy?
Yeah,
like,
no,
I,
you
like
are a little crazy, dude. You know that.
The sad thing is, JD is what we all aspire to be, the geek with the pretty wife, you know, so.
Oh, yeah, and then some. So, probably shouldn't go any farther into that. Let's not.
Some people went, what?
No. Can't talk about it, want to, need to do that new show.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else, guys?
I've got something to add for the third party stuff, if that's okay.
Add away, Don.
Okay. Fans Project Core, the fans website, heads up for pre-order Virus, which is a basically Shattered Glass code from their Function series. I saw this at BotCon.
Which figure is Code?
Code is their not Chrome Dome. The one they did last year at Christmas for the... Children's Charities.
Right, yeah.
This is a black, gray, and red repaint. Very pretty. So if you can't find Code...
Why not pink and white?
Sorry?
Why not pink and white?
Yeah.
Because they hate me. But, but you know, that's up for pre-order now. It's $79.99 for members of the Fans Project Core site, $89 for non-members. You can get up to three shipped for $12.99.
Okay,
so
cool.
So that's available at the Fans Project Core site.
That's cool. I probably won't get it because it's not the Chrome Dome colors, but I regret not getting that figure. But it was it was one of those things that you donated money to. Was it Haiti?
Yeah,
I believe.
And then they gave you that.
Yeah.
Damn, that was really nice. I like that. Actually, JD, reminds me real quick, we need to bring back, what was it, Operation, what was it called?
I don't know, it's had a couple of different names, but yeah, it's the peg warmer thing.
What did we call that last year, guys?
Operation Bumblebee, wasn't it?
That was the name of an episode. That was the name of an episode of Prime.
I thought it was like Beehive or something.
Beehive, Operation Beehive, that was it.
Beehive. So we're going to be trying to bring that back. We've got a couple of different ideas. To kind of centralize it and make it not so scattered everywhere kind of thing. So
actually make it work.
Yeah, actually make it work. So don't buy anything yet. Wait. Don't buy anything yet. Stick with us. And we'll try to roll out.
We'll transform our ideas.
Transform it and
try to roll out a plan here in the next couple of weeks for how to participate. So keep listening.
Yeah, pretty excited about that.
But we are planning on doing that again this year. I think you know. Hopefully, this will be I think it's finally stuck. I think it's going to be something that we do every year. And,
as long as we perfect it this time.
Yeah, and this year might actually be the year that we actually do it in a way that is more effective and I think is at least more measurable. Measurable, yeah. Use that term, measurable.
So I think we'll have details next week. We just need to talk through it and actually plan it. So
actually plan it out. So
what's wrong?
Hey Massey, that's awesome. Okay, so happy 14th anniversary, guys. I'm Brian Kilby. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio and on Facebook at facebook.com/TF Radio and check out all of our shows at tfradio.net. We'll see you later. Have a good one.
Take care, guys.
Radio Free Cybertron, Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Watch our live stream at tfradio.net/live. Join our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/tfradio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, TF Radio Network. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons license. Any part of this podcast can and should be redistributed, but please, proper attribution is required. If you know what's good for you,